As you know, Chairperson, there's two deputy ministers, one for the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. Then there's a deputy for Correctional Services, and there's one for Justice, other one for Justice. So these people in the front here, I have nothing to do with. I'm with my people.
No, that's fine. That's okay. But welcome, comrades, and we thank you for being here. We understand that the minister is not in the country, outside the country, and so cannot be with us. I think comrades, there is a decision we must take. About process, but maybe let us start with the normal usual formality of introductions, so that we know who is here, and then we can get into the substance of the engagement. So, Comrade Deputy Minister, I will hand over to you through you for the officials to introduce themselves. And I'm not sure people from National Treasury. And the National Treasury people, the Auditor General Office, and then comrades can then introduce themselves, and then we can get underway. I think today we intend to have an early day, so the sooner we are done, the better. We're going to be here any longer because of the officials. Explanations that they give, otherwise we want to keep it short and to the point.
Chairperson, thanks. Maybe just to give the apologies of the Minister, there was meant to be a formal letter, but it seems he wasn't able to sign it before he left. He's attending a BRICS legal seminar, so that's he's not in the country. I think, Chair, without trying to point fingers or anything, there were some problems, coordination problems between SCOPA and the two departments. So, for example, the letter to the minister, which was sent on the 19th last week, was copied to the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services. It wasn't copied to me, so I was in fact unaware of this meeting until yesterday, and I would have to leave early for another engagement with the National Council of Provinces on the implementation of the Child Justice Act. The invitation, it doesn't appear to be an invitation to the Director General of Justice. All I've seen is a invitation to the Acting Commissioner of Correctional Services requesting him to speak on third-party funds, but it's the third-party funds in the Justice budget vote. So the DD is also involved with this Child Justice Seminar, and she chairs the Interdepartmental Steering Committee. So she has direct things she's got to account for at the NCOP. So she had sent Mr. Johnson, who you may know, the former Acting Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Justice, and Ms. Rousseau, who is the Chief Financial Officer. So those are the tools who would be able to respond to all the queries, and they have come specifically down to Cape Town for the meeting. Then there's Mr. Mokoena, who is the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the department, and then also acting for the ministry while the ministry's parliamentary liaison officer is, and then there's also the chairperson of the audit committee, Mr. Khaledi. So that's the delegation from Justice.
Okay. Can we have Correctional Service introducing themselves? I'm sure Commissioner will allow them to introduce themselves. Justice had the privilege of having the Deputy Minister around.
thank the chairperson, members of the committee. My name is Zakaria Modise, and I'm the acting National Commissioner of Correctional Services.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. My name is Nick Lugege. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Department.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Terence Rasaroka. I'm the Acting Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for strategic management.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. My name is Kisanolo Majake. I'm the Audit Chairperson for the Department of Correctional Services.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Ntabise Musubie. I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner for Information Technology.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Emmanuel Koza, the Acting Deputy Commissioner of Human Resources.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nandi Mareka. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Financial and Management Accounting.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Mango Bango. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Supply Chain Management.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Nozi Pozondo. I'm the Chief Audit Executive.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. My name is Pico Bambo. I'm the Deputy Commissioner responsible for intergovernmental relations. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable Chairperson and members. My name is Cora Maria from the National Treasury.
Good morning, honorable members and Chair. My name is Doug Huffle from the OAG, National Treasury.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Renane Randea from the Public Science Division of the National Treasury.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Mugwe Wasi. I'm a member of the Council.
Good morning, honorable Chair and honorable members, colleagues. My name is Barry Wheeler. I'm the one of the corporate executives audit in the Office of the Auditor General. My three colleagues here with me today are dealing with correctional services, and my two colleagues are currently dealing with adjustment process. Thank you, kindly.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Soli Chien, the senior manager responsible for the work of the Department of Correctional Services.
Good morning, honourable Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Lois Van Fiel, and I'm the business executive responsible for this portfolio.
Good morning, honourable Chair and honourable members. My name is Kitimetsi Mukwane from the Auditor General's Office.
Good morning, honourable Chair and honourable members. My name is Paris Kadi from the Auditor General.
Good morning, honourable Chair and honourable members. I'm Adelai Myers, the Business Executive responsible for Justice.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. I'm Yusuf Isaac, the Senior Manager responsible for the Department of Justice.
Second part, good morning, Chairperson. My name is Mkule Bafiao, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Anson Smith, member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. Tim Bautasets, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson Kuno, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Saki Cheka and I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Kaka Chiwa, a member of the committee.
Good morning, lovely South Africans. My name is Miyam Zilipwe.
Alright, thank you. I am Kumbi Temba Kuti. I chair the committee. Right, let me confirm what the Deputy Minister said, that the letters that we wrote were directed to the Acting National Commissioner, talking about correctional services and deputy funds, as well as the Deputy Minister Makwetla. So that is the mistake that happened from our side. So as to clear the department for what has happened. The Deputy Minister is also going to be here for not for long. He has other engagements, but felt needed to make a turn here before leaving. Comrade Paul, here you hand up.
Chair, after listening to what the Deputy Minister said and what you are saying, where we stood, we are dealing with the accounting officer more than any other person. Because from our own information where we sit, we do need the DG. It will be very difficult for us to proceed engaging juniors there. It's because the accounting officer, the one that is really responsible for what is going on here, and what the PFMA is directing us to do, it will be very difficult for us to open up and allow other officials to be engaged. We prefer you to resolve this matter, but we need the DJ to be here. Simple, straight, that's what we do. Our information says that this thing is in tatters. What we have to deal with, it's not correct, and it will be very difficult for us. So you want to get the accounting officer to come and account, why is the trouble in this thing? And exactly so that the Deputy Minister would know from experience that he doesn't have much, just have to listen how we look at the situation. So the accounting officer is the DG, give us that one.
Lord, sir?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you know, whilst I agree with the Honourable Member point, and we express our disquiet at the fact that the DG is not here, I would not like us to waste the opportunity to try and make some headway today. We do have, in terms of the matter that I'm leading on, which is the compensation fund, I do have the CFO here in that and the previous CFO. So I believe we can make some headway. However, I think we need to register, obviously, our stern disapproval of the fact that the DG is not here. And I understand that that could well have been on our committee side, but it is saying some unusual that there are a host of other officials here except the DG. So I understand that maybe a formal invitation to reach the DG, but surely if one puts one's finger in there and thinks is where the wind is going, you understand that everybody else is here today except the DG. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I think I align myself with Honourable Boy, because the problem is, if the DG is not here and somebody else takes responsibility, it might be a problem, because the accounting officer in the department is the DG, and that responsibility cannot be delegated to somebody else. And I strongly recommend that maybe yourself, the Deputy Minister, please try and arrange something. We need that is the accounting officer that is to be present in this meeting, because most of the issues that we want to address that to the accounting officer and nobody else. I'll come back to you.
Thank you very much.
This last.
Chair, no thanks. It would be desirable that today we make headway, but I think we must make headway with the relevant persons, and the relevant person is the DG, because we're now going to find ourselves in a boundary if we delegate accountability to somebody else. It's the DG that is to be as unfortunate as it is that there was a communication breakdown. I don't think we assist the process if we continue with persons who are not, where the buck doesn't stop. So I would be of the view that we must find an opportunity to establish the DG, and then the DG can come with the officials who, in her presence, can then give those responses. But in the absence of the DG, I think we run the risk of shortchanging ourselves in what we want to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with the colleagues. We'll be setting a wrong precedent, and I think we need to be consistent with everything that we do as a committee. if we can return a certain department because the accounting officer is not here, it shouldn't be different with any other department. So I think apologies are in order for those who are here, but you need to talk to the accounting officer of the department who's the teacher.
Chair, I concur, hence I didn't raise any hand. I concur with the previous speakers in terms of this agreement. Precisely so, we have also have to have the executive authority here. We appreciate the deputy ministers here, but the North Department has got two deputy ministers, which we believe in the absence of, because Honorable J.J. is saying he'll be leaving shortly again, and which means there won't be any other political here to take political decision in terms of what will be discussed. So I really do concur that we should follow the procedure that we've laid before, not change, divert from anything that we've done previously.
All right.
It definitely appears that the mood in the room is that we're going to not proceed today. I must therefore register my strong concern and disapproval of inofficials that we're supposed to have advised the DG. One of our primary functions in this committee is to protect against frivolous and wasteful expenditure. This is a prime example. We have all the costs involved in bringing all these officials here to appear for us today, and because somebody simply hasn't done a simple administration task, we have wasted that function. So we've actually shot ourselves in the foot of that. So I need to register the strongest concern and disapproval of that. That cannot happen. We need to be the paragons of virtue in this regard. It cannot happen on our watch. So please, in future, make absolutely sure, if we're not going to make any advance to that, make absolutely sure that doesn't happen again. Please.
I want to close this report.
Chair, I thought that what you are saying, and we are appealing to you to reinvest the deputy minister and find a solution, because it seems as if she's not far or she's more in Cape Town. So that we will find her to come. We're quite willing to wait. We want to have the DG here so that the expenditure the honourable member is talking about, we can deal with it at that stage. What we are quite clear is that we're not in the fishing. We don't want to fish. We want to be effectual. So that when we come to the conclusion for our contribution, how we look into that particular entity, we know exactly that the DG is conscious about the concerns that you are expressing.
Right.
And that's our responsibility, and we can't be fishing
around. All right. That's fine. I don't know, Deputy Minister, whether... Okay, let me...
Chairperson, the DG is here in Cape Town. It's a clash effectively of it was a problem around the invitation. She had sent the chief financial officer, who would be the person, anyone who would be answering most of the questions. Obviously, the DG, as the members correctly say, is the accounting officer. But it's more been a clash of issues in terms of the NCOP is having a workshop on the Child Justice Act. The DG chairs the intersectoral committee, but I think there have been messages sent to the DG, and I think she is on the incoming here. So hopefully she will. She is. I'm told she is on her way here. That would be over from 120 Plain Street. On the issue of the executive authority issue, look, as I said, the problem is I never even got a formal. The minister had. Is not available, and I never even got a formal invitation. But I do understand that I think you have in the past allowed ministers or deputy ministers to attend and then to leave. So hopefully once the DD comes, there won't be a restriction to you proceeding on the justice matter.
Hello, I was going to say, Honorable Deputy Minister, we have heard the visit of all the executive authorities, and quite clearly when they are under pressure, we relieve them to go ahead, you see. That we have been doing consistently. So we won't really be putting you under pressure on that area. We'll accept our apologies, but
if the PG is here, we'll be able to interact with you.
All right. No, I think that's fine. Let's proceed. And yeah, what is that? Ben Dombi, I hope when we have these mesh departments, don't rely on the officials, you see, because now you say you spoke to somebody who said do it this way, they are not here and they can't account. We have to take responsibility ourselves. So maybe let's check more and rely less on what we get from some of the officials that night. I want us to then get into the business of the day.
Thank you, Shepherd. Just one thing on top of that, Honorable Boy has said in terms of Deputy Minister JJ, we're talking in terms of the Deputy Minister, like he explained that there are two deputies. The other Deputy Minister is responsible for correctional services. We're talking on that basis. Did we get any apology from the Deputy Minister that is not going to come or what indication? Just a clarity.
Not on our side. We have, but yeah, there's been no communication. All right, it's just one of those things. We'll get everything right. Comrades, may I make a request that we switch off our cellular phones, please. Don't put it on silent. Just switch it off. Because when it rings on silent, at the time that it is ringing, whatever has been said is not being recorded. That's simple fact. So please, just switch off your cellular phone. Because these phones have a tendency of ringing right in the middle of the hearing to show that someone has not been compliant with the request. So please, just switch off your cellular phone. Then, right. We will start with correctional services. I hope you all have copies of the program. Right, Acting Commissioner, we welcome you
My apologies, you've got the copy of the program, but we know that the department has submitted copies of annual reports, but it seems as if they were duplicated in the office. What is it, office page? Yeah, and we don't have any copy here. It's just a scribble of some other information from the previous the briefing. I don't know if maybe between us, ESCOP, in terms of Parliament, if maybe we could be able to make arrangements in terms of all entities when departments that when they table, at least we get extra copies for our committee, because when you go there, they table, but it's only 15, there's nothing. It's difficult really to engage with an annual report.
Nonsense. I think we let's complete the
just a request. DG is, I've just confirmed with her verbally on the phone, is on her way here from 120 Payne Street. Would it be possible to start with Justice as soon as he gets here? Because she does also have responsibilities at this NCOP Child Justice workshop, so she would be able to complete and then attend there, rather than if you start with, my fear is if you start with correctional services, I think there's a number of issues with them, so you would probably only get to the DG much later or to Justice much later.
Well, we're just starting, and she's not here. I don't know. all right. Let's give 300 seconds and see
Comrades, may we proceed. The DG of Justice, welcome. And we've already expressed our apologies. We may as well repeat them in presence. The invitation that went out was not specifically addressed and sent to you, even the Deputy Minister. So, well, created its own little problems. But all is well that ends well, I suppose. And now that we're here, we can quickly, because by the end you must still go back the fight and to pay with that. So we decided we better start with the third party first. And now, as you recall, DG, having been one of those DG there, we have had extensive discussions on the third party fund, even took a tour to go around and see for ourselves. The previous planet, just to appreciate the magnitude of the challenges, both in the rural courts, down in Solomahash, Bushport region, to Johannesburg, and Limpopo, is that. But it does seem that the challenges, huge as they are, they persist. And so we felt it would be useful for us to have this engagement to get a sense. This is where we were. This is where we are now. How are we dealing with these age-old challenges so that finally we can say we are at the desirable position. And it was really a feeling of members that if you are here as the head of the department, it would assist the process of interaction. Appreciating that the other officers are also here to us, but at least if you're here, the better. So I'll hand over to Honorable Broutishat to take us through the areas of concern for the COVID on the
artifacts. Chair, thank you. Welcome, DG. It's great to have you here with us and thank you for taking the time to shoot across the line. We appreciate it. Chair, when one has been involved in forensic financial work for a number of years, there is a simple measure. And that is, if you want anything to run properly, you just need to bring three basic factors. You need systems, you manage to those systems, and then that should lead to accountability. And what concerns me lately about the third-party fund is that, effectively, at the end of the day, it is essentially a bookkeeping question. It's money in, money out. And yet, despite it being a relatively simple function, it seems to be in complete disarray. And I can only, and obviously I'm reviewing all the research done and reviewing all the work that is and all the reports on the matter, is that your system number one is massively problematic, JMS, and it appears that the management of the poor system that you have at the moment is incomplete or wanting greatly, and as a result you have very little accountability. Because you've got a pot of the cash in the middle of the room and nobody's watching the pot of the cash. And anybody can take it and no one knows who's taken it. It's that simple. So before I get into a whole litany of questions, can I just start with asking the DG to respond as to whether there's been any improvement on the system? After the unsigned visits, the issue raised that JDAS needed to change. So there needs to be an implementation of some other system. Because also we're aware of the fact that these things are separate, the sub-JDAS system is working all over the place. So if you could just lead off as an introductory statement as to where you are on the system and then we can move further on that other aspect. If that's okay with you, Chair. It'll just give us an idea of where we are. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Chairperson and honourable members, DM and colleagues. I have to kick off with the broad question of where we are with the system, and then the issue of people who are managing it, and then finally the issue of accountability and drop hands. There are a few things that I must say slightly before that. We came to this Honourable House to indicate the processes that we were going to undertake then in 2011, to indicate that we were going to take up certain processes and introduce certain systems to assist us. But we did indicate that at that point in time, whilst we were very mindful of where of the problems associated with DDoS, we felt that the system that we had indicated that we had wanted to introduce at that particular point in time was too big or too expensive for us, and we were not going to be able to afford it under the current economic conditions. We then said we were going to look for a smaller system that was going to assist us going forward. The process has started. We issued a tender. The process has started. The responses have been evaluated, and we are now working on the actual development of the system. So that is one aspect. But let's go back now to JDAS as a problematic system. I think we've always said JDAS was a problematic system precisely because in each course you had a certain different version of JDAS, even though you had an overall JDAS in the department. And as a result, you were not able to make one change in the system if you had found that there was a problem in course A with a particular aspect of the system. You make one correction in that area, and then it corrects automatically country-wise, and that is the problem. It remains a problem as we speak. But we said there were a few things that we needed to tidy up in JDAS, even though it was an imperfect system at the time, because we understood that it takes a long time to procure a system. So we tidied up some of the imperfections in JDAS, and therefore we were able to work with JDAS for the past 2 or 3 years. But I agree, there are serious shortcomings with JDAS, and therefore we will be able to replace JDAS over a period of time. Secondly, the issue of accountability. You'd also recall that we came to this Honourable House and we said we are worried about the capacity. I said specifically then that for as long as PPF had existed, the department had never paid attention to it in the serious sense, and we wanted to start paying attention to PPF, and even though we had accounted for PPF in our own internal way, but we had never submitted an annual report to Parliament on PPF, and that was because in the past we didn't have the human resources to do that. That function has been solely outsourced by the department, and what we wanted to do was to build internal capacity to be able to attend to that issue. We have started building, and when we appeared here, we said we had appointed one person, and I still do remember the chairperson saying, how is one person going to address the issue of capacity? And we said we had only just started with the appointment of the chief director. Since we left, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we had a bigger problem, because then we had no CFO when we left. So the very person that we had appointed to do PPF work, they had to act as the CFO and almost do PPF part-time. But in the interim, we have made such improvements in PPF, both in terms of bringing in capacity, training, developing some kind of management processes to ensure that we improve on the issues of management. So we have 44 people that are already appointed and under PPF, under the leadership of Johan Johnson. And indicate he only started working on PPF when the new CFO was appointed, which was when? Last year. Last year, September 2014. And as a result of that, obviously the traction that we have seen has improved, but obviously we are far from where we should be. Then lastly, on the issue of accountability, there has been a significant, if I can say that, of course, without way of contradiction, but knowing that the results as audited are still problematic because we will be scared. We have seen quite a lot of improvement. I had said to this Honourable House when we came, one of the things that we were going to prioritize was to ensure that we revert the responsibility to the regional heads where these funds are located. We revert them to court managers where these funds are located, because prior to this, when we had consultants who were working, they were working only with the CFO's office. So there was nobody who was on the ground ensuring that these funds are accounted for in the manner that they should have been accounted for. So what we have done in improving governance around accountability is we have said this responsibility must be taken specifically by the regional head and the court managers, and that has started happening. To ensure that this is happening, we said each court will generate its own, so to speak, financial statements on a year-on-year basis, just so that we start seeing where are the problems at court level rather than at consolidation level, which is what we were having all along, where when we were consolidating, we didn't know what was happening at each court level, and I think that has improved somewhat. Are we not having issues of losses of money? May I also say, Chairperson, in the past 3 years, we have been seeing losses, but if I can talk about last year alone, we only lost about a million rand compared to the 2.7 billion rand which came in and which went out. So there we have improved quite considerably. You remember that when we came here, we said we had a shortfall of about 80 million. We've worked on that shortfall. We've tried to recover money from those who we thought had done us in terms of the losses. But in addition to that, in addition to all these corrections that we did, is they were people that we disciplined because we thought they were errant in their responsibilities, and there are people that we have parted with as a result of that, but also they have been progressive discipline in some instances, and in some instances, there have been recoveries. So currently the shortage is sitting at 49.9 million compared to the 8 million that we had reported, because we have been working behind the scenes. I must indicate, Chairperson, just as I conclude on the issues that we were asked questions on, we have ensured that we report on a regular basis. So quarterly we meet. On a monthly basis, we discuss the issues of monthly reports with the CFO, with the chief directors concerned, with the regional heads. The regional heads meet at least once a month, where one of the agenda items is what is happening in the CF space in their individual environments. Secondly, we look at where we are in terms of systems development as part of the monthly meetings. And thirdly, we look at how much are we collecting and whether we are paying out. I must indicate there was one court specifically, Chairperson, which was in the Swiss case, where because of some of the management issues that had arisen in the Swiss state, we were behind in paying people quite considerably. But when we discovered that, we went at it, I dispensed a lot of people into that court. We addressed the issues within that month, and we are back in paying on a normal basis. And then the last point is related to this issue. In what we said we were going to do, one of the things we said we were going to do was we were going to limit the money coming into the department and dispensed or paid out by the department. We were going to be talking to the judiciary to assist us in doing direct court orders where a plaintiff is paid directly. And that we have done. So you will see that in the past year specifically, we have received a lot less money into our CPF coffers, and we've paid out a lot more. But also, those who are supposed to pay out have been ordered by the court, and they are paying directly into the bank. So the risk of that money coming into our fund has reduced somewhat, and that is where we want to grow intensity in terms of our work while finalizing the system and using the system going forward. Just as in there, and thank you very much.
Thank you, DJ. I clearly gave you a nice framework for this to respond. I think that was a good response to all the issues. So we discussed systems and case management. What is the current state of the interim audit? Where's the city project? What I need to know is I want to know how many people are involved in it, how many qualified staff do you have working on it? Is it a committee of two or three people? Is it a backup staff? What is your capacity interim audit? Because as you know, the trouble always starts with interim audit. If you don't have sufficient interim audit capacity, you can see these errors. The next question is, in terms of management, are the courts reconciling on a daily basis? Okay? Is that information then collated on a monthly basis and reported on a quarterly basis, or more frequently. I need specific responses on your reconciliations of amounts collected and issued out. There are also concerns.
No. I wanted to respond to the two or three questions.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. On the issue of management, and I kind of missed the first part. Was the honourable member asking about internal audit or just management of internal of PPF?
Do you have an internal audit committee?
Okay. All right.
And what is this capacity?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Perhaps one of the things that I should have mentioned is that we have never had a stronger audit committee in the department than we have now, both in terms of the technical skills that we have and the rigor and robustness that we are held to account to the internal audit committee for them to assist us in giving us direction and also in assisting us in engaging with the Office of the Auditor General. So the audit committee under the chairperson of Mr. Garrity has really been very useful in terms of just the hardcore financial skill and the hardcore auditing skill. And they've brought things that, if I were to put it this way, which were on the blind side of management, they have been able to surface those issues for us, and that has been very useful. We have, so to speak, a full-strength audit committee as we speak, and we are quite comfortable with that. So if there is any shortcoming, it would purely be shortcoming of management rather than the shortcoming of the audit committee, because I can say with comfort that we are receiving a lot of comfort of guidance there. In terms of the internal audit, we have a good quality now, internal audit. You would recall that in 2011 we had said we did have internal audit, however it was not full strength. And even though today it's not full strength, it's a different not full strength. It's the fact that people are coming in, but some people are leaving the in terms of just the normal people leaving the organization. But overall, we have a structure of internal audits. We have chief internal audit. They have auditing experience and auditing background. And what was the difficulty in the previous year was that internal audit was not made a center of management in the same way as we are doing it now. Internal audit forms part of our ESCO, so they advise us, they submit reports to me personally, directly. I read the reports, we convene meetings of those areas where people are must do some correction. I meet with them, I write to them, we meet directly, sometimes alone, sometimes with internal audit, so that they can provide whatever explanation is necessary. Internal audit has been doing a whole lot of audits, site visits and site audits. Will bring reports to me and read reports, will convene and we will then deal with those issues. However, having said that, because the internal audit does this work and because sometimes on the ground where the courts are, there is sometimes lack of capacity. So you do find that some of the findings that the internal auditor gives us are repeat findings. They are not first-time findings. And those issues we are now beginning to focus on to try and limit an indicator, repeat findings where the internal audit report has indicated the findings. The next question deals with, so maybe what I am at there, let me also just indicate that not all courts have high-end technical skills in the finance and financial management and bookkeeping. Not all of them do. But what we do is where we know that there is a gap, we do deploy resources from other regions and from other courts to try and address those issues until such time we have full strength capacity in those courts. I must indicate that there are some courts the internal auditors have come back without specific strong findings, and we are comforted by that because we are now beginning to see that it is quite possible, regardless of the system, that you could have courts that do not have findings. Then the last question on reconciliation. Excuse me. That we do reconcile, the courts are reconciling on a daily basis, and I'm going to say that positively sometimes. Because if the skills are not there and are not extensive on the ground, some of the reconciliations can be problematic and have been problematic. I must indicate in my own visits, because I do visit courts, and one of the things, the reasons why I visit courts, is to ensure that I check this area specifically, in addition to the auditors, in addition to the CFO's office. I also do go and do that. But we are reconciling on a monthly basis. Where there is weakness in the reconciliations, I have deployed the CFO's team to go and assist them, firstly, but also to then ensure that they are worked to the hand in terms of doing the reconciliation. So the quality, perhaps that's the question. What is the quality of those reconciliations? I will say the quality is very varied. It's from a very weak end and to a very strong end. But what we are focusing on is to ensure that where there is the strong end, we begin to try and infuse that experience into areas where, particularly in rural courts, where there are still significant weaknesses in the quality of the reconciliations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, thank you, Didi. Moving on. Before we move on, you referred to high-end technical skills. Bookkeeping is not a high-end technical skill. It's a matter of internet, okay? It's a matter of keeping basic books. So, whilst I understand you obviously need your IT policy working properly and your IT resources working properly, bookkeeping is not a high-end technical skill. That is unobtainable. I'm not saying it's not a valued skill, but it's not a scarce resource. But now, so we've worked on management. Now, just before we go into accountability, so is it possible for you to monitor all of this? So, in the first part of the next response, could you just tell me what regional plan do you have, what regional resource do you have, to make sure that there is monthly accounting is going on in the multiple courts, because obviously we have so many courts in South Africa. Then when it comes to accountability, the research shows that there have been possibility to make payments out of authorization for the system in the past. Can you give us an idea of how many cases of fraud have been prosecuted by yourself? Can we carry on there, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I go back to the issue of high-end deals and low-end deals and bookkeeping being in a skill that is there in the market? I agree. But I agree in the context. So when I was saying high-end skills, I mean people who may have the bookkeeping, broad knowledge of bookkeeping, but who must then understand and interpret what happens in the system, the data system, because its configuration is such that your normal average bookkeeper would really have to understand the system to be able to give you the results that you want. So that is the one aspect. The other aspect is that we have deployed at least at financial level one deputy director per court just to ensure. Sorry. May I exaggerated that. One deputy director per region. And that person then consolidates all the court reconciliations and everywhere. But please understand that even if you do have those people and are sitting at the same level, their own personal expertise may not be the same across the board. I mean, you have all of us here, but we have different level of skills and level of attention in terms of skills. So there will always be that where some regions will then perform better. But perhaps let me just indicate this as well before I get to the issue of fraud. That in terms of where the regions have performed better, that's because you would have had perhaps the head of the region and the head of those courts being consistently there over a period of time. So where we've just brought in skills, we cannot expect to see a turnaround, let's say, in a few months or even in a few years. And that is why you will see that the huge differential between, for instance, Cape Town and Free State. I just wanted to clarify that. Now, in terms of fraud cases, there are two ways of how we deal with issues of fraud and corruption in the department. In our own department, they have a forensic investigation team, which, when I came here last, I said that was the biggest problem because there were a number of cases that were investigated, and I said then that we had cases that were outstanding since 2001, and when I was here it was probably 2011. And I said that was because we didn't have capacity in forensic investigations in department. We only had one person at the time. We have since grown forensic investigations, and it is performing at quite a reasonable rate now, and we are very comforted by that. So they have been doing quite a lot of investigations, and it is those investigations that have resulted, one, in some people being fired, and some people being arrested, and in some people being disciplined, in whether progressively or in terms of the normal provisions of the Public Service Act. So cases of fraud, and maybe this is where, if the Honourable Member allows me, I can compare with my colleagues, but there are quite a number of cases of fraud that we have reported to the police, and there have been people that have been arrested in the department. But in terms of that, I just have to just compare the number before I answer that question in specific terms. I am comforted by one issue specifically. Sorry about that. I am comforted by one issue specifically. The one issue that comforts me is that in 2010, if you compare 2010 to 2015, in 2010, we had no idea what was happening and what caused, except if someone had been caught. In 2015, we get information either from the police of what is happening in court. People are beginning to report because now people are becoming competitive between at a court-to-court level as well as in that environment, in that one court, where they do not want responsibility to be theirs if they have a shortage. And because we have now held people accountable for shortages of money where they had lost money, we are seeing a lot of people coming forward and reporting that there is a problem here and there is a problem there. Now, just speaking to the issue of numbers around... Okay, give me a minute. I'll respond to that. Continue with your question. I'll clear that just now. Thanks.
Thank you, Jay. Regarding accountability, I actually have your answer for you because I asked the Minister a question on this in terms of investigations. It appears that you've only found guilty 7 officials in the last 3 years. Okay, you've had 103 dismissals, and 7 personally felt guilty, obviously by SAPS. You know, besides that. My final question to you is as follows. You've explained to us that you're fixing the system. It's going out to tender. It's all going to be perfectly sorted out now. Okay? You've explained to me that your internal audit committee is much better, close to top-notch. You've got regional managers, a whole lot of DDGs, and you are taking action against people. If we come back here next year and there's still a disclaimer on this, will you resign? Thank you,
Chairperson. I think the question is appropriate, particularly at this time in my life. You won't find me here next year, for sure. but that aside, if I was here next year and we had disclaimer, I probably would resign. Because I have invested my life and soul in ensuring that we turn this thing around. I will not want to speak to the Auditor General's issues, but I do meet with the Auditor General representatives quite often. And our meetings are one directed at giving me an insight other than my own music or music of my department to understand from where they sit, how they see the problems, and how they think I can intervene. I must indicate that their guidance to me and to my management has been quite invaluable. We have not moved as quickly as we should have, not because we did not move physically, but it's because the issues that we were dealing with were so embedded for over so many years that you can't just wake up and have resolved them, especially if you didn't have capacity on hand. I do hope for this year even, the 2014-2015, financial year, that we are not likely to be disclaimed. I'm not saying we won't. I honestly in my heart believe we are not likely to be disturbed. And that's not because I am wishing or I am for this honorable committee. The drills we are doing, the engagements we are doing, both internally and externally, even with our external stakeholders, we engage them and we say, what do you think is we need to do in addition to all the things that we have done at systems level, at people level, and at accountability level. So with all those interventions and the ongoing drills that we are doing on a regular basis, really honestly, if we were disclaimed this year, qualified, I probably think that we will, but disclaimed, I don't think we will this year. And I'm hoping that we are going to get ourselves outside of the qualification zone, probably even in the following year, post this current year. Let me indicate why I say this. With the department itself, we were disclaimed in performance information, but in financial information we were qualified. We had to work from a disclaimer on performance information to where we are today, and audited our performance, I can say as I sit here, is very good. In fact, I think it's excellent. But in terms of moving with the financial information, we are unqualified, and I'm comfortable with that. And I see that if we have been able to work like that in these other broad areas of the department, which are a lot bigger than CPF, there is a likelihood that once you have a system in place, we can actually get ourselves into a disclaimer. So if you are looking for my resignation this time next year for a disclaimer, you might have to wait for a little longer. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Didi, thank you for your candid responses. I appreciate it. And I certainly hope that you don't appear before us next year. The whole purpose of this is to get your department and this particular entity working perfectly. So I certainly hope we don't need to ask for your resignation. But Chair, that's me. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to my colleagues. I'm sure I'll champion it a bit.
Okay. Thank you. Honorable Luke.
Did you think I should say something, Mr. Chair? What would you like me to say, sir?
I saw you shaking your head when she spoke about progressive
treatment. Yes, you were watching me. Mr. Chairman, we had that discussion yesterday, and I think I now understand it, although I find it a very strange concept, because, if something is wrong, it needs to be disciplined out of the way, not progressively moved out of the way. But I'm not keen to get into that discussion, Mr. Chairman. But I do have a couple of other questions, if you would.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Didi. And it is refreshing to have someone who quite clearly accepts the difficulties and the problems and is clearly trying to do something about it. But let me say that the question of this JDES system, which has been a problem for years and years, and we still haven't even got to the point of designing a new system. If it even was my home household accounts, I think I would have slit my wrists by now, if not divorced my wife. The risks were so high, and yet I understand the difficulties, but I don't know if there's anything more for you to say, quite honestly. It's not a question, it's simply a statement. Mr. Chin, I'm curious. I'm not okay with how the court system works, and for your information, I'm proud to say I have never appeared before a court of law in my 62 years on this planet. So I don't even, I've never been into a courtroom whilst sitting, and perhaps I should. So I really don't know how these things work very well. So I'm just curious about this third-party fund. Does it only operate in magistrates' courts and not in high courts or traditional courts? And I'm getting a nod, so that's fine. Thank you very much. Just a technical question. I know you're trying very hard, but just come here and tell us that you don't know what's going on at court level, because you only see the consolidated report. Well, to do a consolidation, you have to have the individual reports. And so I'm not sure why you're saying you don't know what's going on at court level, because you can't do a consolidation unless you've got the individual court one. So perhaps the detail is made it difficult for you, but you will answer the question yourself. The last question, Mr. Chairman, is I've expressed my lack of any experience in court matters. If I, as a member of this committee, were to do an oversight on my local court, who exactly, and in particular this fund, who would I ask to see? Thank you.
Alright, Comrade Sulai and Comrade Kuno.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, DG. Good morning, and I'm glad to hear that you won't be able to resign. We can't expect that in the next coming years. Speaking from the premise that I was a member of this committee in the previous term, and when we undertook the oversight visit to check really and on the status, especially on the financial part of it, and checking the terms of the opinions by the NG in terms of unable to obtain sufficient audit evidence for this opinion, and also checking in terms of the recommendation that you made in the last year term. I'm not trying to bring the fourth term chairperson, but just to get a path into where we are today. We did recommend really, DG, that documents, especially as required by the AG, to be made available in terms of the entity to improve its financial management system. And I see, in terms of this opinion, means that recommendation probably will have fallen out. As much as probably will receive a resignation that we have resigned, because this fund is a very important one in terms of the arm of the government and in terms of its doing its work. It's something that we cannot live with it. But if we say, let's close shop, I think probably we will agree as a committee say, let's close shop. But because of the importance of it, then we can't do it. The other follow-up that I wanted to make is in terms of your security measures, because you remember that you promised that there are security measures that you will put in place in terms of your cameras in all the courts and all the systems to check the progress therefore. And the adjustment that are unexplainable, and they are not even back in terms of the old trial. What is the situation in terms of that? I think for now, to person at both there so that we get time to the issues to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. DG, I might not have heard you properly. I'm sorry if I didn't, but when we were talking about the internal auditors, we talked about the bookkeepers, that they are bookkeepers. I didn't hear you properly. Okay, because I actually asked a question, you know, what are the requirements of internal auditors as a regulation of government? And to me, the qualifications are quite clear. You need to have a CIA certificate and all that. So I was actually worried about the way we were talking about this as the qualifications. We were talking as if, you know, it's by the way. I've heard that you have agreed that you had problems in the past, but you're trying to improve the problems. But if I look at the Auditor General's report, and or your report to the Auditor General, about audit committee members and attendance. To me, it's like it's not people who are based in the department. They come and go as the meeting. That's what you have reported to the Auditor General. Others have attended 5 meetings. One has attended 1 meeting, and they've been reappointed and all that. I wanted to understand all that, because if you look into the problem that this entity has, I think it's due to your audit queries and all that. There are no clear record keeping. There's no clear record keeping. There's this, nobody's accounting for any money that has received. So I think if this internal auditing was taken seriously by this entity, I don't think we'd have this problem. But I was listening to you clearly, you know, as you were responding to him as well.
to say that you don't think next year you have a disclaimer, but you have a qualified report. What do you think in your own terms? You know, you've been there for some time. I think, I assume, due to the way you've been responding, you've been there for some time. And up to now, there's still a problem. You know, you can't say, I know we don't want you to come here and convince us on something that is not going to be achieved. The honesty, I think, is appreciated. But you cannot do, we can't keep on postponing to do the right thing. What do you think in your right hand? What will be the task step to say, we are changing this entity? And I can turn things around and make sure in the next few months that are left before the report to the Auditor General and all that about the qualification, I would have turned things around. I need you to tell us. I mean, we can't year in, year out, come out and complain. I agree, we are honest and all that, but we need to see past steps. You have talked about improvements, but I'm not convinced that you are really sure of your improvements. If next year you are not going to, you say you're not going to have a disclaimer, it's good, but we don't want to see a qualified report. We want to see an unqualified report. I think that's what we are here for as public representatives. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I agree that we have been blocking JDAS and JDAS changes for a while. I agree. But I also would like to put it to the Honourable House that procurement processes, especially of an IT nature, take time. It's not that we hadn't done anything, and maybe I should go back and explain what had happened. We had concluded the process of procurement for the PPP, private partnership. Yes, that long way. We had done that. We had concluded that. But so that whole procurement had been concluded. The only difficulty was that it was concluded at the time when the economy was really, really bad in the country, and therefore, as a result, we couldn't go and commit and procure that system because it was very expensive, and the size, it was very big. So we decided we wanted to do a smaller system just from an affordability point of view. So we then had to redo the process, because to undo that process took literally about a year, if not a year and a half. And so after undoing it, we then started with the procurement process. We want to be piloting the first newly developed system probably around September 2015. And after that, we will then extend the band of piloting. And then finally, we will then say we are commissioning the system. Hopefully, the system could be commissioned in the middle of 2016-2017 financial year. But we will be using the results of each of the pilots just to see whether we are making progress or not. The other issue that perhaps I did not mention is that at the end of 2011, we had brought in external auditing company to assist us in ensuring that we configure some elements of data such that we can be able to report. We were able to be assisted, and they did assist us, even though we didn't get the results we were looking for, because of the magnitude of the problems that were in JDAS. But we were able to start the reporting, and they were able to assist us with certain elements of the reporting. So to the extent that is the case, there has been a delay. I take full responsibility for that delay. I think it's a delay that was unavoidable under the current circumstances. Then
just a minute. Please, we have requested that Phil Lagos should be off. The noise we're hearing now was gold ringing outside it. At that time, whatever she was saying has not been recorded. As if she must repeat. That was strange. Now it's fine. Continue. Dudley, please check your Phil Lagos. Have a
outside and have all phones to go there. Okay, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. The second question was whether the PPF money are only in magistrate courts. The answer is in the positive. And yes, indeed, there are no PPF monies in tribunal courts and in any other courts. But PPF monies come in a variety of elements. There is an element that is sitting in state attorney's offices countrywide, because there is in bonds and those types of things. So there is that money which you will not find in courts, but which you will find in state attorney's offices. The lack of audit evidence, I think in the new, and when I say new, perhaps it's a misnomer, in the current audit evidence that we are generating, we are able to give that to the auditors and there are no difficulties there. It's in areas of outstanding or long-term work that for many years, because if there's a transaction that is found that has happened over many years and there is no evidence, unfortunately we are not able to recreate evidence. But in areas where we have been able to recreate the files, we have been able to provide evidence to the auditor general. But there is quite a vast number of files that have old transactions that become auditable for one reason or the other in the current year. And those, if there is no evidence, we are unable to recreate evidence under those circumstances. There is no wanton lack of wanting to provide audit evidence to the auditor general. In fact, if there was someone who was refusing, I'm sure I would have a fit. But I am not aware that people are literally refusing to provide information to the auditor general. But there are instances where evidence is just not there, either because it has been destroyed or because it has been lost. But otherwise, we do try. And I've indicated to the auditor general that if there was a difficulty of that nature, if they could let me know so that I can assist them in securing the information, we can deal with the internal issues later on. But they must have received the information for audit purposes. Lack of security measures. There is some element of accurateness there in terms of security. Not all our courts have security, so to speak, cameras and all of those things, just because we do not have resources to do that. But there are courts that all those resources are working, and there are courts where those resources are not working as efficiently as they should. And we attend to that as a normal maintenance of court infrastructure on a month-on-month or period per period basis. So I will accept that there would be that limitation. There are unexplained adjustments as a question. Indeed, I had indicated earlier that in some areas of our business, it is quite likely that you have that as a situation. The reason for that is because the skills are not at the same level nationally, and so people may do adjustments that are unexplainable. But what we have done under the leadership of Mr. Johnson is we have said go back and unpack whatever these big numbers that we do not understand, go and unpack them, try and find as much evidence for these unexplainable numbers so that we are able to explain them. And we are finding that those numbers are reducing. It's not that they are not there, but they are reducing quite significantly. I can show you that in terms of the internal audit, specifically the internal audit capacity and skills, the people who are employed in the internal audit, particularly the chief internal audit, have the right skills in terms of being qualified accountants and so I'm comforted by that. The chief internal audit has CIA, so I'm comforted by those skills. But they are quite vibrant, I must indicate on that.
CIA?
Certified internal audit. Yes, certified internal audit. So, but I was also indicating, Honourable Chair, that in internal audits we have quite vibrant young colleagues who are doing quite a selling job in the internal audits. I mean, I meet with them. We have, not on a month-on-month basis, but occasionally we have scheduled visits, which I do for course, where I bring in internal audits and I bring in managers and I bring in the people, the bookkeepers that were talking about earlier, so that we can talk to them and understand from where they see what their problem is and understand the internal audit and let the internal audit talk to the people directly so that they tell them what is this that they are looking for that the people are not doing on the ground. And in terms of our annual audit action plan, we have an annual audit action plan which we review every after audit. It takes a while, but we review it every after audit where we tell people what to do, but there we have the actions that we report to, and the Auditor General has access to our annual audit action plan. They don't always comment quite positively about it, but at least it's there and they acknowledge that it exists and they want us to do it a little faster. And then on the issue of is it possible to have an unqualified audit opinion next year? We are very conservative and we are very realistic. We think that it would be near a miracle to pull that off. We are working towards that. But my opinion, is that I think we are doing a lot of work, but until the system is in place and we have at least given it less work, it's not possible for me to say we will have an unqualified audit opinion. But I can assure you, I think, that's my opinion, we are not going to have a disclaimer because of the reasons that I had already indicated. And they never said, what are these drastic steps that we are going to take? May I just articulate at least five of those and nothing more. One, we are going to ensure that we improve on the daily reconciliation and the monthly reconciliation. We are already doing that, but as I had said, the quality is still an issue. We are going to try and do the improve the quality of the reconciliation. Secondly, we are going to ensure and continue holding the regional heads and the court managers, because it's at a court level where we are having problems. And thirdly, to ensure that they take responsibility. Thirdly, the issue of discipline is going to come in. Fourthly, the issue of fast-tracking the system in the way that I did say that by September this year, we should be doing the first phase of testing and implementation at the pilot level of the system. And then finally, the regular conversations that we are having as a department, departmental-wide, and the inter-assistance that comes from other regions, from one region to the other, especially to the distressed region. And right now, in my view, we only have one distressed, very distressed region, and that's Free State. The rest of the regions are coping quite well, but the Free State, we still believe that it needs a little bit of work. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. I'll come back to you. I'll give Sarah and come forward.
So, thank you, sir, and good morning. I mean, if you look at the age analysis of the TPF, I find very little comfort in what is being said. I'm sure that these niceties, as much as I appreciate the honesty of the DT, I'm sure we've been down this road of these niceties before, and, well, the results have been contrary to the niceties. And I think the decentralized manner in which it's being managed, it's a rather top-heavy approach, as far as I'm concerned. And the problems are not taking place at the top. It's really much day-to-day, practical, financial management which should be in place. Now, this data system, which I would trying to believe is very complicated, for lack of a better word, even think complicated might be an understatement, is of course causing problems, and now it is going to be going under review. But why in the first place would we have wasted so much money on a complicated system when we knew that the capacities of those courts and so on that was not high-pitched enough to withstand those complications? We shot ourselves in the foot even to begin with. We're not technologically advanced as we'd want to be, and we could then go and, you know, so that one is one quite frankly borders on wasteful expenditure. The system was put in place where we did not have the technical skills to begin with. Because, I mean, Honorable Bratis had said bookkeeping is not a high in technical skill, and the DC said, well, she agrees, but in the instance of this system, he would need that. So, of course, then that on its own for me is a problem. So, I think
because we understand quite clearly that the problems that I'll use the word grassroots without any disrespect to anybody, but I mean that's just colloquial term. Grassroots, that's where the problem is. And when the DG says they're doing year on year financials, that's what I heard you say, year on year financials. I don't think year on year financials are going to assist in the midst of a crisis, because this is what it is. Because we can get a new system now which is going to require all sorts of other training. And so year on year is just not going to cut it. So I think we need a turnaround strategy which focuses on grassroots interventions and not a mega approach as it comes at this point in time, because that is where the problems are. I mean, rural areas and semi-urban areas and so on are by and large going to be having these difficulties, because first and foremost, none of the people who would, well, your high-end bookkeepers would actually even want to go and work in those areas. So we know that we've got that challenge. So a demographic approach which addresses even that issue of who you have there, for me, is an issue. So I was just consulting with the Honorable Lisa, the saying that the taste of pudding is in the eating. I think we can only come to a conclusion once we've received the financial part, because the age analysis over the past 5 years, underpinned by these messages, has not produced any results. So I honestly think that that we are not doing ourselves any justice, quite frankly, with this, because we've got nothing to show for it. So let us go back. But I was just, because I mean the audit committee is speaking about controls and system processes have historically been inadequate. This is the historic thing that has been there. There's a lighter thing really approaching it. So I think it suspends the intervention to the very, very bottom where the problem is, and ensure that we capacitate and have the skills necessary where it actually matters. Spot visits, don't touch it, because once the DG has come in and she goes, I'm inclined to believe that things will most likely go back to normal. I appreciate the interventions of taking the trouble to go there, but once off visit and systems remain the same, in the absence of capacity at grassroots level, is going to be a problem.
Okay,
thank
you.
On the board. Good morning, DG. As you are saying, you know, we are very impressed about how far you want to be honest with us. But the point is very simple. We are also religious people. We do pray. But we've got a political responsibility. And unlucky for you, you are working for government. And that's where we are coming from. So the hard problems, we quite hear about how honest you are, but you must deal with it. I do hope you have got this document, which is, and if you go to page 15 of this document, we deal with the issues of leadership. Now, it's not my reflection, it's what the auditor says. The auditor says the information systems in place are inadequate and not reliable in financial reporting in order to assist the leadership to adequately manage and exercise effective oversight regarding the financial operations of the fund. That's what the auditor says. So quite clearly, between me and you being a good analyst on the issues of economy, the bottom line here, we're dealing with women who are poor. You see, when this government is very gender sensitive, now if we behave in this particular way, if I think that these poor women must continue to be punished by the systems for them to be able to get a maintenance, that's a very difficult thing that I deal with my consciousness. These are women, and all of us, and we are leading them as women. If the systems like this, it's not described by me, it's described by the auditor general, how much can we believe you? You see? Because he says, if you start from page 40, in the way he describes the situation, he can't, even in how you are doing his cash payments, he can't
put his finger down that we are doing a very good job. You see, that's the biggest challenge. Let's go to page 16. Financial management. Management did not have adequate implement proper records keeping in a timely manner to ensure that complete, relevant, and accurate information is accessible and available in, to support financial reporting. You see, so between honesty of what you are reflecting and what the auditor general is telling us as parliament, how much do you want us to believe you? Because there's a problem here, you see. It's in black and white, written by the auditor general, an institution that carries responsibility. It can't confirm your honesty. There is a problem here. Management did not adequately implement controls over daily and monthly processes and reconciling of transactions. This is what the auditor general says. So in you carrying around the cash, picking up the receipts, there's no reconciliation, you see. So what do you want us to do as parliament? Because you see the back stops with you. It doesn't stop with anybody. That's why you call. And it's very clear. We're to ask you to come and account to us. What do you expect us to do here? Because this is what the auditor general says. On 17, management did not prepare regular, accurate, and complete financial reports that were supported and evidence for reliable information. So you don't have information. It's not reliable. These are the words used by the auditor general. How do you expect us, after 21 years, a government dealing with women and dealing with the ordinary, poor of the poor, who are being abandoned by their husbands and becoming irresponsible? And when you say that we are a caring government, how do you explain this to us? How do you convince us? Because this is what the auditor general says. Let's deal with investigations. Various investigations are in progress and are at different stages of the process to cope cash shortages within the environment of the courts, where cash is received and paid out. Such shortages are identified by management at disclosed in those framework. I'm just saying, it has given us a good confidence, I say your honesty, that your systems are in place or you are able to adequately convince us that things are moving forward. I'm clear that why I was not part of the committee then, that this committee went out of its way to try to assist you when I look at the SCOPA report. But I did not turn around here. You see, it's good for you to have done a very good point in economic analysis. But the disaster is that, what do you think about the poor at that particular moment? This was government and the state intervention is here. The state must be able to make sure that its own systems are in place. That even the poor woman, as Honorable Feng has already said, but in rural areas, how do you think we should deal with this? Take us through and be very honest with us. I hear you have said it, but it doesn't convince me that the system is in place. What are you going to do? Take us forward. Because the auditor general is not happy at all. And when he's not happy, we are not happy. It can be about you. It could be about the system.
All right. I want us to round off so that the remaining 2 hours can equally dedicated to correctional services. Comrade Kuno, then lastly it will be you, Comrade Chua.
And thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to make a follow-up, but I agree with both my colleagues, Comrade Shengwa and Comrade Boye. Maybe you don't understand the things that we go through as members of Parliament in our own constituencies. When somebody says, I've gone to the maintenance court 4 times, they have to pay from their pocket to go and get money that's not enough that is going to sustain the family or the kid with a fatherless nature. And I think this situation is making it worse instead of comforting our people. That's how we need to take people seriously. Employees, they look at you if you're not decisive. If you're not showing them that, you know, if you don't do this, there will be consequences. They will play around. And that's why they will take money and it's not accounted for.
I think Honorable Boy actually substantiated everything with the facts that are in the report, the Auditor General's report. So I hope that you will give us the progress report before the end of the financial year on quarterly basis to say this is where you are. Because I agree with Honorable Shano. If you're waiting for the system that is, you said the retenders out already going to start, but there'll still be the same people who will be feeding the system. The system won't feed itself. Somebody has to feed it. But are we ready as an entity to feed that system, to make sure that the information that is there is accurate? It's for the health of our people. And I'm actually disappointed because I'm from Bloemfontein. If there's anything that we could do, I think we should do that. But the security measures that you are talking about that we don't have, this problem of inequality, we need to solve it. It's 21 years of independent governance. So there's really no excuse that we still have some halls that have security measures and others that they don't have. Why can't you budget for that? If it was budgeted for, why is it not done? And I know that I'm just assuming that it will be your rural courts, it will be your peri-urban, you know, areas and all that. But the biggest places, they'll always be taken care of. So please, we need to see equality in all the courts in South Africa. Thank you. Thank you, Chaplain. Just briefly, if a follow-up on the response that the DG has made in terms of the audit evidence, the way she has given the response. I just thought maybe the AG will come into here because the AG, the DG is talking about some evidence that you can't trace it. I don't know after how long, and some which has got lost. I just got confused because what I was talking about is on the report, page 15, which has resulted in the opinion that the AG has said in terms of the fund. So I just wanted to find out, probably, I don't know, Chairperson, maybe the AG could come in, because she talked about something that information getting lost and information difficult. I just didn't understand. I just wanted to bring it back that I took the questions that I was asking, they emanate from the report, the annual report of the AG. Maybe the AG could come in and chip in and try to assist us in terms of understanding this issue.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay. DG out. Of course, maybe the Auditor General could also come in. My understanding from, and I think that's where they can also assist. My understanding from the DG, it was, I think if we look back at the briefing of the AG, you note that for sometimes they did not prepare annual financial statements because everything was. And now they went back and then started to compile the annual financial statement. Now, IRS would have to be saying some of those old transactions, because it is paper-based, some of the files do not have all the information that you can. So I think that's what maybe the AG can clarify with us, is that the common understanding in terms of where the information is at. I think for me, DG, out of the five things that you've mentioned as key, I see three as being probably, I don't know, maybe they're all the same level, and I'm trying to put them in the order of importance. Because this information that they must give to the AG is generated at the level of the court. So your court head, I don't know, is that the correct way? Your court head, if they are just legal people with no financial inclination, that's where we're going to have a problem. And head office will never get tried until each court is able to run the process appropriately, because that's where the evidence is generated. Two, and I thought it could also be useful to members, if you could, if it is possible, if not possible now, but maybe later, to just say how many courts are able to do their daily reconciliation. Because remember when we did our tour, I think we went to Joburg and found that there was a court that has everything in order.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how many are now getting things right? So we can see, okay, out of the 200 courts mm-hmm. that were in the country, at least 75 are doing the right thing. So we can then be able to measure and see progress. And that's, of course, the case of discipline, taking action against the officials who would not do the right things, deterrent, consequence management. I mean, that's our word now for discipline.
Mm-hmm.
We call it consequence management. I think it's also very good because the system, even if it's like it's been operated by human beings. So if human beings, they are heads in the clouds, they'll continue to do the wrong things. And everyone is right. We need a system that functions outside your occasional visit. But I suppose a visit from head office, from you, from time to time, can have a positive effect on the outlook of the members down there, even if you're not going to be there every day. But, you know, those constant interaction. So I think these five elements are key from where I'm standing to, for us as a basis to follow up and for you to be able to come back. So if you can briefly, because we... with professional services people here with us, and we have specific time frame to engage with them. So,
I'm just wanted to be told by the Auditor General, as we're asking, what the teachers face, that those that information is then, if they come to conclusion that we won't lose it. How much does the Auditor General get involved? We're talking about human beings here. And what is the magnitude of the problem?
Yeah. No, we'll give the Auditor General to but let's start with the DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll try and be extremely quick. I think I dealt with the issue of information systems. Allow me, Chair, not to deal with it again because my answer is going to be the same on the information system. But I wanted to perhaps put on record in this Honourable House that no woman or mother or a beneficiary of maintenance is not paid their money just because the system has a problem necessarily. It shouldn't happen. If their money is there, in other words, we've received the money, we don't pay it just because there is a problem. No. We pay it whether manually or whatever the problem is, which is why I was specifying Bloemfontein, because in Bloemfontein we had that problem as an example. And then we went there and we addressed it, because if you have money with us, remember we don't pay the money that comes from somewhere else, we pay the money that comes from them. In other words, it's the money for the beneficiary, we pay it back. If for some reason, and let me, I can put it on record, if for some reason your money has been stolen in the court, we use our own money to pay that woman back. So I just wanted to make that clear, that as long as the money was received by us, it will be paid back. So we make provision for that in our books. And you will see that in the annual report of the department. I just wanted to be clear on that. And Chairperson, I can assure you, in the recent past, we had about a sentence of about 15 years, a sentence of 8 years, a sentence of about 4 years and 7 years and a few other shorter sentences in a court of law where people had stolen money. The investigations take time, but that happens. But concurrent with that, what we also do is, in addition, is we do a discipline. Even if the person goes to court, we do the discipline and we exit them out of the system. And where we can recover from their pension, some of them do not have sufficient pension, others don't have pensions at all because they are new in the system, then we can't recover anything. But where we can recover, we do, and we can provide that information going forward. A new system and old people, I think that the point has a lot of merit. But what we have done in the past 2-3 years, we've tried about 2,429 people, 80% of the staff already, on how the new system, on how they must conduct themselves. And we are going to do that once the system starts unfolding.
And in terms of inequality and the budget, there is an element of truth in the observation and the concern, but it's not always that the rural courts are the ones who do not have the security infrastructure. I think the problem is varied across the board. The African courts, there are semi-urban courts as well as the rural courts who do have the infrastructure, and there are those who do not have the infrastructure. So we don't discriminate on those bases. But perhaps the last issue I wanted to raise, Chair, because I don't want to take much time, is that the interventions we are doing are intended to remove money from our daily handling of the money. We can tell you that right now we are sitting at about 98% of money that is no longer kept in our offices or in our courts. That is already done through an ESP process, so we do not now handle the money. But the of course,
maintenance
money, yes, especially maintenance money. Perhaps to a certain extent, bail money we still handle because there are people who still want to be paid in cash for bail money. And we have appealed to people, and people have responded positively by paying bank accounts. And I did say earlier that the judiciary has assisted us as well in ensuring that people are paid directly, in other words, from one plaintiff, well, from the plaintiff to the defendant, or whatever the right combination is.
To the mother,
yes. Chair, I have not responded to all questions specifically because some of them I had dealt with earlier, and I have noted all of them, however, with the seriousness that they have been raised, but I'm conscious of the time, and the Chair has already... have we centralized TPF management? There was a point at which we centralized TPF management, but we have since decentralized TPF management. We decentralized in 2011. So each area is now dealt with at court level. And that is why when we are talking about people accounting at the level of a court, that's decentralization. But obviously we must consolidate at an organizational level going forward. So they, and whether JDAS was a waste of money or not, at the time I think JDAS was useful. But as the accounting dynamics improved and changed, JDAS became less relevant year on year. And it wasn't a waste of money. I wouldn't say it was wasteful expenditure necessarily. I would say it has lived its existence, outlived its existence, the right weight. That's what I mean. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Okay, thanks. Maybe can we check from the Auditor General side in relation to the issue on records and any other issues that had been raised before the response to the issue?
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Honourable members, I think DG has given the history. Around 2011-12, there were about 3 years of financial statements that were outstanding. At that time, there was a practice within the department to dispose of records within a very short space of time, within a year or so. So initially, in the first year, we had serious limitations of scope, and DG is correct in saying that over the years, the current transactions, we have seen a decreased rate where we couldn't find documentation. However, the challenge remains that, and as the members have pointed out, the controls at court level. And this is what the department is now doing differently. In the past, we relied on the courts for the information and the figures, etc., and head office did the consolidation, whereas this year what they have done differently is gone specifically to the court to verify that if you are specifically stating that the balance on this beneficiary is 1,000 rand, are you able to show that you've got 1,000 rand payable that's due to the beneficiary? What we've picked up in the past is that you may show a liability of 1,000 rand that you owe the beneficiary. However, the records indicate that you've paid the money out already. So the closing balances that you have sitting as your creditor was problematic. So I think in summary, that there's a whole long story you can go into, but in summary, if you get the closing balances right in terms of your payables that's due to beneficiaries, a lot of the problems will be fixed in that manner.
Right. Thank you very much. I want us to move to the next report. Is it small?
Yes.
Okay.
No. The Auditor General, which are we here? Who's got the authority to be able to say this type of information that they are destroying? How does that happen? You know, there should be a condone by the Treasury or what? Or is it just the decision of the DG and the personnel she's working with? That's what I'm not clear about.
On the question, if I'm addressed, Honourable Chair, on the question of the keeping of documents, it's covered under the empirical documents legislation, which is predominantly the Archives Act, where each department has a specific arrangement with the National Archives in terms of its record keeping. Now, when it comes to financial records, and I'm talking about things such as receipts, such as checks, such as electronic record keeping, that's fairly fixed and generally standardized across government. The problem comes in when you're looking at other records. Each department has its own arrangement with the Department of Archives, and as my colleague mentioned, historically, the view was to destroy documents relatively quickly within the court system. That may need to be reviewed, but that might be up to the Accountant General, together with the National Archives, that it may make that decision.
Okay.
I trust it answers the question. There's also, maybe I need to point out as well, there should be the deficiency in any accounting records required for auditing purposes. It's a responsibility then of the accounting officer through the DG to try, and it's really been alluded to today, to try and recreate the necessary documentation to give probity to the payments that were made or the revenue which has been received. And that obviously needs to be evidenced through some form of proper authentication as well. So that responsibility again lies with the accounting officer of the department concerned. And that's what have been attempted to do in such cases.
Okay.
In the past. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. DG, wish you the best of luck in getting the party funds in place. Unlike Umazumbana, I've been to court, inside the court, but have not had to deal with the third party funds in any way whatsoever. All right. I think Commission would request that at least you be near the members whilst we excuse the DG.
Regard to particular correctional services issues of OSD
and as well as center-based, non-center-based. We have then decided that the acting DC, Mr. Cora, accompanies us to the signal today.
That's fine. I just needed the clarity. So, let's go to the annual report on page 121. No, I beg your pardon. The annual report is page 41. Page 41 on the annual report, and if you go to last year's report, which you don't have, I have it here. I should be doing it differently. I'm sure you'll be aware of it. If you look at, those that have this year's report, it is not page 41, it is page, matter of 8, on the Auditor General's report for this year. Yeah, here we are. Yeah. Matters of HR is page 94, I apologize, sir. On 94 in the current report, and if you then go to page 121 in the previous report, the concerns are exactly the same. Some employees in the department performed remuneration work outside of employment without any information. It appeared in the previous report, it appeared in this report. Some employees, family members did business. It appeared in the previous report, it appeared in this report. Awards were made with the players that were blacklisted. It appeared 2011-2012. It appeared to itself. I want to make the point here. I'll get to why I'm making that point. Let me get to the next part of it. So the point that I'm making here is that there's been no progress. Purely from the Auditor General's report. Absolutely no progress on HR matters. And that's why I asked you as the HR manager. So the first question that I'd want to put, on page 41, that's where my meditation. If you go to page 41 of the current end report, and you don't have to go to it, I'll read it to you, HR manager. Under your corporate services sub-program, as at the 31st of March 2013, you have 40,149 employees, and your funded posts were 41,911. That was your funded post. You had only 40,000. So there were 1,762 vacancies. Can you tell us what happened to the money for those 1,762 vacancies? Because it says these were funded posts, but there were vacancies. What happened to that money?
Honourable Chairperson and members, I was trying to establish as to whether the Honourable Member will give us all the questions or should we respond to the questions?
No, we'll respond question by question so that we don't have a long list of questions.
Chairperson and members, with regard to this question that has been put to us about the vacancies, I think the question is double-sided. Firstly, it was with regard to officials that are performing remunerative work outside of their own work. I would like to respond as follows. apart from the Auditor General and the National Treasury making us aware of officials that are performing work outside of their own work, remunerative work, and families being involved in provision of services, the department does not have a system to identify these officials unless we are being informed by the AG. We have approached the National Treasury and as well as the Auditor General to assist us in that regard so that ourselves we are able to clean our records and show that officials are not performing any remunerative work outside of their employment. We have not been successful in obtaining that system, but we still are on record as requesting the Auditor General to assist us in that regard. With regard to the budget that was provided for those vacancies, I'm going to request that person that I be allowed to utilize some of the officials that are with me here, especially the former acting CFO, Ms. Mareka, to provide us with a response in that regard so that we are then able to deal with that matter. Thank you, sir.
I thought the accounting officer, before you start selling, are you saying to us you don't know what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Just simple, before you start telling us who to listen to. I thought that the accounting officer, and they're giving us what is the state of things. If you don't know what's going on, it's fine. But tell us, because we are the ones who are expecting to give the answers before you start telling us how to expect it from other people.
Chairperson, thank you very much. You know that I don't know what has happened, and it's not that I'm shifting the responsibility. I wanted us to be provided with a clear response. What normally happens, Chairperson, is on a two-monthly basis, we have a budget committee that sits, and we then look at our expenditure trends. And where the expenditure trends indicate that there is under expenditure in one budget program, and over-expenditure in the other, the budget committee then takes a decision as to do a requirement of funds. And in that regard, I think Chairperson, I must state that that is what is happening.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But let's talk to the specific question about the 1,000 who... Yeah, all right. Ms. Marek, so the DG shifted it to you.
Thanks, Chairperson. With regard to the under expenditure that happened due to the department not filling all the funded vacancies, indeed we in here during 2013-14 reprioritized the funding to programs, and mainly it was program care for nutrition services and also for the rations of the inmates, for medical care, and also a large amount of money for the fuel.
Okay. No, that's fine. I think so. That's how the money was distributed.
No. Thanks, Chair. Now, I want to refer all of us that have got reports to page 42. I hear what the CFO is saying, Chair. The difficulty that we have, if you look at page 42 of the annual report, it says amount appropriated.
Which paragraph?
No, page 42, right on the top.
Okay.
This is now explaining what happened to the money for that sub-program too. If you look right on the top, the purple one, it says final appropriation 13556. Are you with me, sir?
Yep.
Yeah. And it says amount spent was 13552. Now, when you read that thing as layman, without this explanation that she's giving us, what it suggests to us that when Parliament approved the budget, we approved 13552, it doesn't show anywhere that there was movement of money. Unless I'm reading it wrong, because it says that was the final appropriation, or is this the final appropriation after appropriations or before? Because that must be clarified, otherwise we wouldn't raise this question. Because just looking at it as it is, I would expect that we'll be saying, this is the appropriation, so much money was moved out to health, to nutrition, so that we can chase it when we get to health and nutrition. We must be able to say it's moved from here to there. And I'm just saying, this is a public document. we want to see that, because I'm sure we'll get nutrition. I would expect that nutrition is the reverse of what's happening here. I'm not sure if they've got, that's just a comment I'm making, and if they want to respond, they should respond to that one. Let's go to the second one then, as we are there. I'm going back to the auditor's findings, I think, on page...
I think Mr. Reka
would
like to respond. So, but maybe let me allow.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. If we go, Honorable Chair, to page 104, that is where per program we are indicating the adjusted appropriation would have come through the National Assembly for voting at the time of the ENA, and then we indicate the environments that have happened across programs and across the economic classification, and then the final appropriation, which is the column then that is reflected per program in the part that deals with the program performance. Now, if you then look at that appropriation on page 104 and the rest of the pages, which is breaking it down, we would then see that we shift the money in total for the year. And then if you look at program administration and incorporation and add-on, rehabilitation, there was a decrease, and care, there was a major increase, and social reintegration, a decrease. I'm talking at the next level, which would be the violence after the adjusted appropriation of tables by the Minister of Finance. So that's where we then indicate. And also per program, we then go per program, we then indicate at least current payments, capital, and all the breakdown in terms of the movement of the appropriation from adjusted appropriation to the environments that were approved by the accounting officer and tables before the executive authority, and we submit every environment that has been approved by the accounting officer to National Treasury as well.
Let's leave it at that, sir. I'm still not satisfied. Because that's a global...
They should allow you to just note the...
I believe what they say, but I'm not satisfied with the presentation. The presentation shows a global environment. If it was for HR, we want to know that it's because of the vacancies of HR, because it hides, one, because next year they will come and ask us for a 5% increase on the baseline. And they won't ask for a 5% increase on the baseline minus what the vitamins are across the board. And that's why I'm saying the annual reports must be changed. Because that's what happens basically across the board. That is why I'm saying I will accept, but I'm not satisfied from a presentation point of view. The Auditor General reports that there is payment for overtime. Now, I thought that we had done away accounting officer with overtime and those things, because that was the problem, and we moved to the new accounting, the new system, two shifts or whatever the case might be. So could you tell us on what basis do people get overtime, if any, and who are these people that get overtime?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. I would like to explain as follows. The department has done away with general overtime, and I want to explain that in the past we had a five-day working week. In other words, from Monday to Friday, our normal working week, and Saturday and Sunday was then regarded as overtime. Now, the department has done away with that and had implemented a seven-day working week. In other words, Monday to Sunday, Saturday and Sunday, they considered as normal working days. But what happens, however, is that with the working week, there is a number of hours that are allocated that an official had to work. And whenever there is a happening that causes that officials work more than that, that is then considered as overtime, firstly. Secondly, from time to time, we have some incidents in some of our correctional centers, which then necessitate that we put people on overtime. And that is overtime that we pay. Otherwise, there is no more overtime as I had indicated generally. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If we go to, I'm looking on page 94 of the Auditor General's report. It says personnel in charge of pay points did not always certify that people got paid, or people that got paid were entitled to pay. In layman's language, it says that there's a possibility of ghost workers. That's what it means. There's a possibility of ghost workers. Because otherwise, how does the Auditor General pick up that you haven't verified who you pay? So my question is, do you agree with the statement, and why is it happening, accounting officer? That persons in charge of payroll don't always certify that those that are receiving money are in fact entitled to money.
Mr. President and honorable members, we have a challenge with regard to our footprint. We have a national head office in Pretoria, and they have regional offices in provinces and far-flung correctional centers. What happens is the payroll then gets distributed to very far and remote areas at a very late stage, after which they would have been certified by the responsible officials. Now, what we have put in place with the advice of the Auditor General, but as well as with ourselves, we sat down and found out that because there are sector offices in almost all of the regions where we are situated, it would then be good for us to make an arrangement that our payrolls get then distributed to sector offices throughout the country, so that payrolls are received on time, are certified on time, to ensure that there are no ghost workers in the Department of Correctional Services. So that's the arrangement that we have now put in place to overcome this challenge.
I just want to check, let me go back and just check on the HR from the previous year, sir. Because you see, if you have picked up the previous year and picked up this year, then the accounting officer must explain why it's taken so long. I just want to check. Yeah. I'm talking about the year 2012-2013, the Auditor General picked it up. 2012-2013, he picked it up. 2013-2014, he picked it up again. Accounting officer comes here and he says to us, they've put systems in place. So what do we believe? Or he's saying to us, they've put systems in place after this report. Because if that's what he's saying, that's fine. But if we believe that in this current year, then it means somebody misled us. That's before they answer, that's what they must say to us. If the AD picks it up in 2014-2016, then it means we are being misled today.
2014-2015.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because I can understand that it was the year before, and it was in this year. Maybe they've taken 2 years. Accounting officers have said they've now used it or whatever the case is. Therefore, it means this must not appear again. And if it does, then we've been misled, and it's a serious problem. So I want to know from the accounting officer, is he prepared to take that risk?
Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, it is quite true that with the audit of 2012, 2013, 2014, that there was this recurrence. And the arrangement that I spoke of earlier, Chairperson, is that because we are having interactions with the Auditor General on a frequent basis, this decision was taken by us last month with the AG. So the possibility is that in the current audit, it may come up, but going forward, I can assure this committee that
for the last 2 years or so, you left certain things.
As a department, we have developed our own arrangement by taking payrolls by regions at the head office and distributing them, which was a lengthy process, which took time.
That's fine.
Let me go to the last one on the HR. I want to refer to page 54 of the annual report. You see, Chair, we have an HR manager. I raised this in the President's debate yesterday. We have an HR manager that gets paid by the state. And here we have the department come to Parliament saying they're going to outsource payroll. They're going to outsource the payroll, they're going to outsource recruitment of HR. Now, the question that I want to ask the person, and it goes further somewhere else and it says they are going to decentralize. Are you decentralizing? Are you outsourcing? And if outsourcing and decentralizing, are you going to have a different consultant in every area that you're decentralizing? And why are you decentralizing HR anyway? So can somebody explain to us what is, and let me just put it up front also. We've heard why this thing is happening, some of us. So when you respond to us, satisfy us so that we can go and verify this thing. Why is there a policy of outsourcing HR? Are you decentralizing HR? And if you're decentralizing HR, how do you outsource and decentralize at the same time? So it doesn't make sense to me as it is standing here, Chairperson, because there are 9 regions. One consultant is going to go to 9 regions, or if you've decentralized it, have you got 9 consultants? Let them just explain this whole concept of decentralizing of HR recruitment.
Chairperson and the members, thanks for again for the opportunity. On page 54, it is indicated that the department is considering the outsourcing and decentralization of those processes, primarily to look at turnaround time. I can state here that there is no outsourcing that has been considered finally as an implementation strategy, and that all others are being handled in regions as part of our turnaround strategy to decentralize. So I can simply say that, Chairperson, in this house.
Satisfies me, Chair, if there's no outsourcing, because it'll have caused a major problem. If you're decentralizing, I can live with that.
If I wanted to check with you, I'm on page 54. I wanted to look and see the paragraph that talks to...
It's right at the end where it says strategy to overcome areas of underperformance, Chair. And if you look at the last two paragraphs, the one that says however, and the next one that says going forward.
Yeah.
Those are the two that talk, Chair. So about outsourcing, decentralizing, because of the turnaround strategy. And they say the intention is to speed it up. So it's those two paragraphs, Chair.
Just a minute. But that sentence says the department will outsource.
That's what it
says. But this thing, they are not outsourcing. So, okay, but continue. So we'll come back to those.
That was my HR and medics can come back to you. So those are the two. Can I then go to expenditure management? And start off. Okay, let me just... Let me start by page 64. I'm glad the accounting of the audit office is here. The audit committee is here. Maybe I should start with the DG before I get to the audit committee. DG, do you think the audit committee is adding value, not DG, account, national commissioner, do you think the audit committee is adding value to the department? That's your sense of the value add of the audit committee.
Chairperson and honourable members, speaking as of now, I can say absolutely with certainty that the audit committee is adding a lot of value to the department. But there were times when the audit committee was not having enough members, and as a result of that, the chairperson and one member were not able to cover all of the responsibilities that they expect the committee to perform for the department. Thank you so much.
Chairperson, are you concurring with the National Commission?
Honourable Chair, through you, yes, Mr. Smith, I do agree with the Commissioner.
Right. Let's go then to page 64 and 65, Chair. The audit committee gives nothing but a damning report of this department. That's why I ask both of them. On effectiveness of internal controls, He says the internal control is not functional for the year under review. Internal audit did not adhere to the annual internal audit plan. And I thought we had an audit manager that's sitting somewhere here, if we're in the introduction. So the audit committee is saying,
I could see.
So the internal audit, and there was an audit manager or something. I'm not always, yes.
Oh, yes.
So internal audit does not exist according to this report. It does not function according to this report. It says, the audit unit did not adhere to the annual internal audit plan. So I don't know if we were paying it for. That's the first point. It says further on, internal audit did not submit any reports to the audit committee on top of page 65. You go down to the auditor general's report. The audit committee has not been provided with any documentation. That's the very last paragraph. The paragraph before that, EA management, the audit committee is not satisfied with the content and quality of audit, of quarterly performance. That's what the audit committee is saying to us. Can we ask the accounting officer, what is the status of internal audit? I'm the National Consulting Accounting Officer. What is the status of internal audit? If this, because you have said you will concur with the audit committee, I'm going to ask you this question. Because you can't come here and say to Parliament, they don't do anything, and you say you're adding value to Parliament. You can't do that to us here. Because then we might as well ask you to resign. You might as well resign today. So I'm asking you first, Commissioner. Is there internal audit? What is this internal audit doing?
Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, I must state that I think I qualified my statement as to the value add by the audit team, as to say that in the past, because it was only two members, the value add was not as it is right now. And we now have a fully fledged audit committee.
That's right.
The audit committee chairperson was... Yes, I'm going there.
Internal audit committee, that's effective.
Yes, chairperson, I'm going there.
Now let's start there.
All right.
That's the way the question wants.
Thanks, chairperson. We have appointed a chief audit executive who is responsible for internal audit in the department.
When?
She was appointed last year, said that I don't have the exact date. What then that means is that...
Before the audit or after the audit?
It is after the audit, sir. So what that means then, the person, is that at the national office, we have an internal audit component. What we then also decided as part of our turnaround strategy was that we need then our own internal auditors in the regions. We have now advertised these positions, and shortly we shall start with the selection process. Already, shortlist has been done. So now the question of...
So they are not there?
They are not there.
The advertisement.
That's correct, sir.
All right. They still advertise?
That's right. We will in our recommendations, so other members I'm sure can look at previous year and see what the questions were, but I'm answering that. Just on this one again, so I'm raising it, because if you go to page 40 of that annual report, the current annual report, it talks about the finance program. Number of audit qualifications. The plan target was zero audit qualifications with the reduction of emphasis on math. That's what it says. And then you go to the second last paragraph, deviations from that target. It says some correctional centers did not account properly. Existence in some instances of assets could not be found. Completeness of assets on the floor. Valuation of assets. And all those type of things. And under the comments, it says none. Now, I'm just trying to understand from the National Commissioner. When you don't make a comment to justify the deviations, is it because you don't care, or is it because you can't you can't justify why there were these deviations. Because if you look at that column under comments from deviations, on all the others you would say you didn't do it because there was a poor turnaround, you didn't do it because of this and that, but under order, there's just none. Can we have an explanation as to why is that column bank? Or is it because you feel that you're doing a good job as correctional services?
Chairperson and honorable members, the indicator there was talking to zero audit qualification. And I think the performance of the department was that there were a number of deficiencies that then made the realization of that objective not possible. And that is why it's indicated where is the problem. That at particular correctional centers, no accounting could be done, no records were possible. So I think the response by the department in that regard is to say there's been no progress in us being able to achieve the non-qualification at that stage. Thanks.
I think the question is more on the last column where you're supposed to make comments on deviation. It was a qualification issue. You could not achieve it. Still have a qualification. And then on the comments, there is none. I think this question is, if somebody looks at it, it's like, well, you didn't comment, but it was more a serious matter, or what was going through your mind when you decided I'm not going to comment on it.
Chairperson, the comments on the column deviation plan target 2030-2040, I think the department is explaining what actually happened there. So I think on this one, where it's indicated none, it should have been some of the comments that are there in that column that is explaining what has happened with regard to our performance, because we did not achieve that target.
So why are they not here in that column? I mean, somebody who is not here who gets this report, they will have to grapple with their own interpretation of why it is none. Shooting yourself in the foot. Okay, comrade.
Thanks, Chair. I'm sure my colleagues will bump on that one for time. Let's move on to the next one, which is procurement. Chair, and procurement is on page 94, where I'm sourcing my information from. First of all, just to start, Chair, let me read what we have there. Oh, this is one that you read. I read it earlier, sorry. Some members performed remunerative work outside. There were employees, close family relatives doing business, and awards were made to suppliers that were blacklisted. Exactly the same as the previous year. Exactly the same as the previous year. Now, and the supply chain management is here. I think I there is somebody from supply chain management. How long has that supply chain management person been in his job? Because there was somebody from supply chain management, wasn't there? And how long has that person been in his post or her post?
In supply chain since 2005.
Thank you very much. Can you tell us who are the companies who were blacklisted that you did business with, and why do you do business with them? It says here, awards were sometimes made to suppliers who were listed by National Treasury not to do business with them, and we did business with them. The procurement manager has been there for 5 years. Why are you doing business with people who are blacklisted? And who are the companies that are blacklisted that you did business with?
Chairperson, there are two companies that have been picked up by AG for the last two years that we are doing business with them. Our contention with AG is that these are doctors that are employed by public hospitals, and our inmates are taken to those hospitals. to be taken, and AG picked up that those doctors, which happened to be directors, are blacklisted. Now, that was what was raised, and we were saying that, but we are taking them to a public hospital, not to a private hospital where they are actually the owners of those businesses. That has been the contention. It's Bishop, the first one, and the other one.
No, I mean, when you say the directors, the doctors, just clarify that their position for me. I thought they are just doctors. When you say directors, then it just throws me off.
Normally, they would pick up directors of companies that actually owners of an enterprise. Now, they were part of that. But when
of what? Part of what?
I'm saying part of the finding that they are directors. But when we researched, we found that they are actually medical doctors because they also indicated
that
were
the directors of what?
Of companies.
Companies. And the doctors.
Yes.
So, all right.
Okay. You see, the department is saying that there's a contention with the Auditor General. There can't be contention with the Auditor General. It's a Treasury regulation. Why is the fight with the Auditor General? It says here, unless you think that the Auditor General is misquoting. It says in Convention of Treasury Regulation 1689. So why are you fighting with the Auditor General if it's a Treasury regulation? And if it is a Treasury regulation, that you don't do business with Vincent. You can't come here and say, because John is in business with Vincent, I'm going to do business with Vincent. Two rights can't make a right. Two wrongs can't make a right. Because your argument is to be taking them to a public hospital, assuming that because it's a public hospital, it is government hospital. Therefore, well, it's a public hospital, we can do it, but the regulations say don't do business with the people. So, can you explain us? It's got nothing to do with the Auditor General, quite frankly. If there's a problem, it's Treasury, and Treasury are here, and they must explain this to us.
Chairperson, if I may, in this regard, the offender I referred to a public hospital, Baragwanath Hospital, for instance. The doctors who are contracted to Baragwanath, who are also belonging to a company who provide that service to Baragwanath, one of those doctors is blacklisted. Now, at the time of referring the offender to Bara, we were not given the opportunity to go and have a look at who is the doctor that is providing the service to the offender that we have referred to a public hospital. So that is where we then got this matter as a query by the AG. Because this doctor, in this company that he belongs, one of them is blacklisted, and not all of them. So that's our challenge.
For the 2 years, that was the same funny.
Chairperson, in this regard, yes, because one of the queries that the AG picked up was of an offender in the instrument, who we then referred to this only one hospital at Nigel. There's no other public hospital there. Now, as a policy matter and as a rule, we don't refer any offender to a private hospital. All of our offenders, if they have to receive medical treatment, are referred to public hospitals. Thank you, sir.
Right. So can we just ask Treasury, because I just don't understand, what criteria do you use to blacklist people? Because if there's a strong criteria to blacklist people, then the state can't do business with them regardless. That's my contention. Regardless. I don't understand this argument that says the one arm of the state says don't do business with Vincent. And the other arm of the state says do business with Vincent. Because Treasury, this will apply even with accountants tomorrow. It will apply with lawyers the next day. Because these are people that consult all over. What can you guys just give us a bit of that? The contention between your regulation and what DDS is doing. Somebody must correct the stuff because we can't have DDS come next year saying, well, we're still going back to that same doctor. And you've blacklisted the doctor. Can you explain this thing to us?
And that doc, that assistant doctor is found in a public hospital.
Yes. Because then we must go to health as well.
To health as well. Well, if indeed that is the case, so...
Before they respond to us, they must be clear of their responses because they've been misleading us. We will raise these things in all these forums. So let us warn DCS again. When you respond, you better be clear that you're giving us accurate responses. Because I can assure you, we will follow this up with Treasury, we will follow it up with HR, we will follow it up with everybody else. We did one the previous teacher.
Thanks. I think there's very clear measures on when a person is blacklisted, and Treasury certainly will enforce that if you're blacklisted, that we don't want any organ of the such to do business. I can understand the challenge. Maybe if it happened once, you know, you could excuse that, and once the fine is raised, you know, it can't happen again. But I understand the challenge, and think that they know now the person is blacklisted, there certainly must be another doctor. So we feel that there can be a way around this. But if it's blacklisted, no organ should certainly do business with them.
Well, they did business with these people, because they're saying it's the same person. They did business with these people since 2012. We are now in 2015. So it's since 2012. Somebody in government is not doing their job properly. And it's our task as the legislature to hold you accountable, because this is not a once-off thing. And let us now put it to your accounting officer, commissioner. Now that you've heard what National Treasury is saying, how are you going to make sure that you don't have this thing starting today? Or are you saying you're going to defy Treasury's regulations? What happens from today? On this particular matter where this stock is in bearer?
Well, nice.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. We have sat down with the AG on this matter, and we have discussed as to how we should go about it. What the department is going to do, Chairperson, is especially on the Nigel issue. If the offenders that are sent to hospitals, public hospitals for treatment, and there is none, we'll then have to transfer them to other institutions where we will then have that service being provided by doctors that have not been blacklisted.
What specialist treatment did they need?
Chairperson, I'm not aware of what was the nature of the treatment, but that is what I know.
Somebody who knows it. You see, Kumri, what I'm trying to establish is, I don't know the Eastern that well, but it can be that either than Niger, there is no public hospital anywhere nearby, unless it is a specialist service. So I want to know.
Let me help you. Fortunately, I come from Niger. There is the nearest hospital there is Blackburn Crusoe Hospital. It's about 15 k's from that is the correctional center.
Yeah, I don't want us to deviate. I want us to go back because that was just one part. Meaning, what Commissioner Vincent was raising, and excuse my friends, it might be that it's not true that there is the only hospital in Niger, because that's what the gentleman was saying, from what Comrade Kekane said.
Yeah.
So, your insistence on taking those people to that treatment might not be because there is no, unless they need a specialist treatment.
No, Chair, what is correct is that the accounting officer here should realize that instead in Parliament, that's with a serious indictment, and it can create a problem for you. I hope you understand that. If you don't understand it, you should read the PFMA and help you. But if you want to see that, read it at your open, and you'll understand how SCOPA acts. I just wanted you to be cautious and clear in your mind that it's not only the Honorable Vincent that is asking this question, it's Parliament. And if your conduct is in the manner that I'm looking at it, we are in collision with you.
All right, Commissioner Vincent.
Thank you, sir. Just two more on expenditure, and then I'm hoping that the audit committee will explain to us what value add. Can I refer members to page 131, Chair, of the annual report, and specifically irregular expenditure. Page 131, paragraph 25.2. 25-2. We've got 16 million irregular expenditure, procurement measure, because procurement procedures are not followed. 16 million because, and you've been in this office for 5 years.
Since 2005.
Oh, since 2005, not for 5 years, since 2005. Yeah. There's a 15 million irregular expenditure, no service level agreement. That in my language means there was no contract. Because a service level agreement is equivalent to contract. So you just paid somebody 15 million, no service level agreement. You paid somebody 17 million, procurement processes were not followed. This is what the Auditor General picks up. So can somebody explain to us, how do we get irregular expenditure for 43 million rand and all of them are pending investigation? So you must tell us why this happened, and Commissioner, you must tell us where are these investigations? Because at the end, or when this document was signed, your explanation was that investigations are pending. Can you tell us what is the progress of those investigations for the irregular expenditure? And can the procurement manager tell us why is it that there's a 17 million rand that you've spent without following procurement policies? Please elaborate on that.
Chairperson and members of the committee, I want to state this fact that I did not come here to mislead the committee. And if the issues that I'm not aware of that would need me to go and get the information, I'll do that. I'll never say something here that would be to mislead. With regards to the question that has been put to us, I'm trying to get my notes here with regard to that specific expenditure so that I can then be able to respond properly. But as I said earlier, I'm here with the team, and at the time of submission of this annual report, Chairperson, I was not in this position. But I'm not trying to shift responsibility away from me. I'm trying to get my facts right here. Thank you.
This is not your face on page 14. Annual report. Did I hear you were acting commissioner that day? You were not at your post when this report was compiled or when the procurement took place?
Chairperson, thank you. I'm trying to get my facts right here. But in responding to the question that the chair is putting to me about the submission of the report. Yes, Chairperson, my race is on the annual report. And I was the person that signed it off because it happened as I was just assuming the position. It was started to act on the 30th of June.
Who was there before you?
The panel that was there before me was Ms. Olingana, who is in the department.
Okay. All right. Let's talk to the issue first.
Yes, sir. Let me just remind you. The issue was, at that time it was pending. I just want to know what is the progress of the pending, and then the procurement manager must try and elaborate on how you procure without hearing to procurement policies.
But if you look comprehensively on the same page, 25.3, you realize that all procurements that were done without following procedures were condoned.
Chairperson, with all respect, we start getting our fake right here. If the chairperson can give us that opportunity, thanks.
I don't know how you're going to get a fax right, because I've got another question, but you can get your fax right. Let me take you to page 132, Chair. We start with an opening fruitless and wasteful expenditure from the previous year of 34 million, 35 million. And the very last line says, amount resolved, 28 million. This is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Can somebody explain how you resolved the fruitless and wasteful expenditure? So as looking for the other one, please explain to us what do you mean when you say fruitless and wasteful expenditure has been resolved and you reduce it from the opening balance. Whilst you, sir, will tell us about how you procure without following procurement policies. I'm not sure there's going to be more time on that, sir, because then I can go on to IT, because I'm done with that one. The last one will be IT.
Yeah.
And
Chairperson, with regard to the 27 million, I think the response is there that it was a tender, HK 1027, HK 11, 2007, that this is our response.
The annual report, is that your response?
No, it's not in the annual report, Chairperson. We are indicating there, Chairperson, that those tenders are cancelled since May 2009 as there has been a fundamental policy and operational review resulting in a major strategic shift and change in objectives within the department. These changes and the desire to achieve the objectives have raised the question whether or not the proposed public-private partnership model that we currently have an SE that could deliver the required services and expected outcomes without undermining a fundamental state responsibility of managing and providing public security. But with regard to the cancellation of that tender, as there was a fundamental shift as to how we want PPPs to operate in the country. Thank you, sir.
Can the commissioner tell me, you see, you're saying you cancel the tender. That's one thing. But you're reversing 27 million rand. Are you saying to us you paid 27 million rand per the original contract? Or let's assume it was a 3-year contract. You paid it and then you cancelled it. Because cancelling a contract and then saying that I'm reversing 27 million rand are two different things here. Because it either means that they can't reverse it. Why would you have raised it in the first instance if you didn't pay it? So that's what I'm trying to understand. Did they pay a contractor for security services? Auditor General picks it up as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. They concur with the Auditor General that it is fruitless and wasteful because they're now moving to another model and are unable to recoup, or do you get this money back from the contractor? That's the point that I'm trying to understand. Do they get the money back or do they just... Because it says resolved. That's why I was asking the question, what does it resolve mean? Is this money in the bank or do we just say, oh well, we're changing course, we've paid you, you walk your way and we will write it off, because we can't allow that to happen.
Chairperson, what I try to indicate to the committee is that there was a process underway. And during that process, with the change of the executive, a decision was taken that we are not going to go ahead with this kind of service by the PPP. And as a result of that, that process was stopped.
Yes. I'm not sure the commissioner's understanding what I'm saying. I'm saying in 2012, there was an opening balance of 71 million rand. And the only question I'm asking, did the state pay that 71 million rand? You see, because they reversed 38 million rand in that year, that was the previous year, they reversed another 37 million rand. The only question I'm asking was the physical outlay of that money. I'm not sure if you're understanding what I'm saying. Is there physical outlay of that money? And if you outlay that money, who gives you the right to reverse it? Who gives you the right to reverse money? Because what it means is that you pay people for services that they haven't provided. Or what is, I'm just trying to, I don't understand the accounting.
Yeah.
And if you can't, then ask the Auditor General to explain it, because I don't understand this accounting.
And I thought you would say when we cancelled those contracts, or we stopped the process of those contracts, we cannot expand. Let me answer. I don't want to suggest an answer and it becomes the answer.
Chairperson, that amount of about 28 million was incurred in the process of finalizing the PPP. After the cabinet memo was received that there has been cancellation, it was one that was used for resolving that amount that had been incurred, which was all the processes that had been involved towards finalizing the PPP, that it was used for the for resolving that amount.
Yeah, no, I'll explain it to my members. I think I'm getting it. So you're saying it's the ones that the minister knows to be reversed. My question then is, why did you do it over 2 years? Why do you reverse 38 million rand in year one and 27 million rand in year two? Because when we took the decision that we were not going that route, we took it over 1 year. We took a decision today, which we are not going that route. So why do you then abandon? I'm just trying to understand, why do you unbundle it if you are saying it was because of that? That's all I'm asking.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The 28 million is the PPP, which the former Minister, Mapisa Mabula, was leading process with regard to the PPP change in goal policy. But the 38 million is in reference to the audit finding that we didn't have an SLA between ourselves and TPW. That's the 38 million. So the 28 is the triple P, the 38 is the PW and DCS SLA matter.
You see, Chair, in 2012, there was no SLA, there was 38 billion rand, the Auditor General picked it up as something that is not acceptable. Then the year that we're talking about, no SLA, 15 million.
Please, comrades, can we
service level agreement. You hear what I'm saying, sir? Mareka is, the officer of Mareka is saying to us, in 2012-13, 38 million rand, related to the Auditor General picking up a payment to, because there was no SLA, and we accept that. This current year, there's another 16 or 15 million because of no SLA. So, is this department then saying it doesn't matter that the Auditor General picks it up, we'll do it again? It doesn't matter the Treasury says that is a blacklisting, they do it again. That's the point that I'm making. If that was for an SLA, the current year we've got the same problem of SLA. So, what is internal audit doing? Why are you not looking at what the Auditor General is picking up the year before? Why do you continue to make the same mistake at 50 million rand, 38 million rand a year before? I just don't understand, sir.
Chairperson, if I may, let me respond. The Honourable Member is quite correct that there were times when there was a repetition or recurrence of non-compliance in the department. And I think this leadership that we are having here has taken a conscious decision that between correctional services, the Auditor General, we have to work on the relationship building so that there's a common understanding of what the AG expects from us and what is it that we need to do to improve our situation. And that is why we are making these changes. Changes for instance, like we now have a chief audit executive. We have approached the executive to approve the increase and the strengthening of the audit committee. Now all of these, Chairperson, that we currently putting in place will not have the desired results now. The desired results will come in time to come. But we have taken a conscious decision that non-compliance that has been happening in the department, we're going to stop it immediately. That I can assure this committee.
I'm in your hands. I want to make a proposal, sir. But you will assist me. There was an IT session that I wanted to deal with. But members, and I'm looking at the time, members might want to act on this one. If I carry on IT, I might not allow them time to, if they have, that's the first point. We still have one to get a view from the audit committee, even for members to respond. IT for me, chair, is what's going to make or break the department.
So
as I said it earlier.
Say, go ahead for a few minutes, because that has been very...
Because members might not be and might not have time to respond. That's fine.
You still have some bit of time.
Okay. No, that's fine. So if we then can move on to the last section, which is the section on IT. Let's start from page number 93, why, and just to explain why I think that this is important. Commissioner, if you look at page 93 on paragraph 28 and 29 where it talks about material inconsistencies. Offenders at the year end is 148,000 on page 27 of your report. This is inconsistent with 157,000 that is disclosed on page 42. One page you say that we have 148,000 inmates. On another page in trade report, you say no, the figure is 157. Now how many inmates are there in South Africa? If you show two different figures. That's the first question. Your annual report shows two different figures. And I'm saying it's an IT matter, GTAP. Because if we are online, and I'll tell you why this is like this. It's because you do it manually. We have 142 prisons. Today, you come and say, this was my lockup figure. And you think you look at 142 to everybody and get the same figure. And yet we spend 900 million on IT. This is because this thing is done manually. So can you explain to us, as at that date, what was the correct figure, and why are these inconsistencies? The next paragraph says, on page 28, the annual report indicates 352 offenders were registered for further education. On page 47, it says 2,988. The same, supposed to be the same figures. So these are the inconsistencies because there is no IT system. And I'm just using that. That's why I'm saying IT, we need to have a debate on it with this department. But I'm just raising it because unless we get the IT right, nothing else that you give us we can agree on. And we've spent 900 million on IT. They must come and explain the RDOMs to us. They must come and explain the integrated system. So I don't think we can do justice to it today. And that's why I was asking that maybe we should deal with other matters and come back with the GISO and the entire IT team. Because the IT team is made up of consultants. So we won't do justice with it. Now I'm suggesting that we ask audit committee to give us their view, allow members to respond on what we've got now, and deal with IT on a different date. But if I'm overruled, I will then settle just with that point, just to indicate why I think IT is a problem. But I must explain the inconsistency.
Okay. You want to talk to what?
Chairperson. We want to do justice in this department.
And under justice.
Because now, practically, you see the holding officer, usually in every notoriety in the KFMA, is violated. I hear the money is looking for to go and reconcile in the corner with the Auditor General. But we have got the responsibility as of now. And we concur with Honorable Vision Smith that we won't be able to do justice. But quite clearly, we need to deal with correctional service on its own. And we want answers. So one of the things we wanted to suggest to you was like, would want the former accounting officer to come in front of us? Because quite clearly, and looking at the situation, the new accounting officer, we are not getting answers. And somebody had to pay a price because you can't violate. If you look at that area, irregularities, there's quite a lot. And Honorable Vincent is correct when you hold on to procurement, but there's quite a lot of penal losses that have taken place there. On behalf of the public, we can't function in this particular way. Give us an opportunity to deal with this department in a very aggressive way and get it right.
Okay. And what?
Chair, I am in agreement with us getting the former accounting officer.
I haven't seen you smile today.
But I can't smile, Chair. Frustration would be an understatement. Chair, but I think we should do so without absolving the current accounting officer, because by penning signature in this annual report, he owned it. And I cannot accept to say I wasn't there. By penning his signature there, he took on full responsibility and was prepared to be accountable for it. But of course, quite frankly, I'm not convinced that the answers that we are receiving, I'm not quite convinced that they are on top of the issues that are confronting the department, and I think that we will be doing ourselves a major injustice. So we do need the previous accounting officer to come here. The issue of IT, yes, I think we need the entire IT team here and those consultants. Because by the discrepancy of the figures, it means that the department has lost 9,000 inmates. I mean, that's almost the balance, the difference between the two figures stated there. 9,000 gone missing. No one knows where they are. The system is lost there. And if the numbers of inmates at the start are inconsistent, that opens up an entire scope for corruption, fraud and administration. Because the positions are going to be made and procured to be made on the basis of 158,000, whether they don't have 158,000. So I think in the absence of that, really, Chair, we are in a predicament to say, moving forward, I don't think we're going to get the answer that you want here. And let us get the team there, unless, and of course, the minister and the deputy minister, they need to be there. This is one department where we cannot afford to be accepting apologies from the political executive authority. Because the department, quite frankly, is in crisis in terms of financial management.
All right. Comrade Kuno.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sweetheart, I'm just thinking about the societies in our township. I think they run better than this department. I want to almost more
design.
Oh, okay. Mangoban. Elokshin, they run better. People are ignorant. They are not taking parliament serious. They are not even taking themselves serious on the work that they are doing on a daily basis. I agree with what Honorable Shengwa has said. I think they must go to their homework. And next time when they come here, we are not as ignorant as they are. We are reading. We are comparing figures. There have been, you know, the correctional services. If you look at the corruption that is happening with the inmates, you can tell that somewhere is wrong within the management. And it's, you know, it's evidenced today that somewhere, you know, in the management level, that's where it's all starting. So I think because now we're having headaches and all that, and people who have high blood, I think the pressure is high. Let us have the executive authority coming in. Let us have the accounting officer. Nobody should be absent in that meeting for us to process this report. This is a disgrace. A disgrace to South Africans. It's a disgrace to us as members of the ANC. This is really a disgrace. And really, we do need to have this. I think when we deal with them, if it means 2 days, we have to do 2 days or the whole day. Not for 2 hours. Thank you, Chairperson.
can we come with Kikane and then Umazama and we close it?
In addition, Chair, if we agree, I think that's what the colleagues are suggesting. That maybe we get the executive authority here and whoever was responsible that is previously. But we also need to get a response on a number of questions that were asked today. Because to be honest, going through the motions now and asking other questions, it is possible that we are not going to get any response or any favorable response. My proposal would be similar to the one that we did yesterday, where we are also saying to the department, they need to look at the AG's report and prepare an action plan that is for us as to how are they going to deal with all those issues that is listed in that report. And when we meet them, that is with the executive authority, they must clearly indicate to us as to what direction is this department that's taking. Because it is very clear that it is in ICU.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chimia, Honorable Kekane kind of said what I want to say, except I want to take it one step further. The question that Honorable Vincent asked about the investigations wasn't touched on. And it applies to irregular as well as wasteful expenditure. There's a lot of investigations. May I request that within 14 days a full report on all those investigations get tabled with this commission?
I thought we are in agreement. I just wanted to just put the terms of the department. I think, Kumis, my view, my sense is that one, the minister and the deputy minister should be here. That's number one. Number two, Ms. Mareka, if I got it right, was the acting CFO at the time. The head of supply chain management has been there for the past 10 years. The head of HR, hopefully, will not have been someone elsewhere, must be here. And the head of IT and the entire team and the consultant must be here. And then we can then have just have the department alone for that day and not have any other. And I think from our side, maybe do some much, much more focused preparation. I think we need to solve this correctional services problem once and for all. I mean, for the whole time that I've been in this committee for almost 10 years, they've never received an unqualified auditor fee. And yet, every other time they've appeared before us, there have been very, very good explanations on things. But come the end of the year, nothing happens. So I think we're not going to go through the motions again. We'll need to deal with issues and conclusions about what happens. Have very firm and specific commitments around a number of issues. So I think, as Honorable Liz indicated, can we, on the issues around process and wasteful expenditure, can we in the meantime, National Commission, can we in the meantime, today is Wednesday, can we by next Tuesday, Wednesday, get a full list of what was involved in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, what constitute the amounts that we have, and how was each of those resolved, if they were resolved or left, or what is happening with each one of them. When did it happen? Who did what? What were the amounts involved? What had happened? What has been done at what stage? So should it be with a regular expenditure? Especially those that you have condoned, what happened? Who did what when? And why was it condoned? Those that are pending, what had happened? Who did what when? Where are we on that particular? So that by the time you come here, we must have that information for ourselves. And of course, the investigations. Can you give us the list of investigations that have been undertaken? We have 20 investigations. These are the issues. These are the allegations. This is where we are on these investigations. Before we even have the engagement. I'm not sure if I've summed it up appropriately. Yes, comrade?
No, you have done it very well, Chairperson. Comes to us. But
it's a question of time, friend. I think the management is going to help you to put it back onto the program in a proper manner. But the one part or two parts that must be very clear, sir, where they have said that the auditor general says this, or the executive authority says this, can you get the letters now confirming what the auditor general has said and what the national treasurer has said and what the executive said in writing? Because quite clearly we can't do it on the basis of believing them, because they can tell us the truth.
Okay. Yeah, I think the one issue I had left out, the National Commissioner, is the issue of, the issue of those employees who engage in remunerative work outside the department. Fine, you don't have the means, but those names that you have, once we have them, to those commissioners, what was that page? Where is the report of the Auditor General? The report of the Auditor General? The one on that section. Where is it?
Hi, did you get a right.
42 say some employees do perform remunerative work outside their employment. And then 43, those with close family members. Because it means there are people who have been identified who are doing this through other people. And fourthly, it is awards made to suppliers who have been blacklisted. The issue of those hospitals, those doctors, can we get the list of, or the names of those doctors and went home and talked to this man, and you are talking to him, so that we know in IGN, these are the doctors, Parapana, these are the doctors, these are the companies to which they belong that will be listed. Because then, as Comrade Vincent indicated, then Department of Health must also tell us how do they contact doctors who were listed. But we also want that when you submit, you said one this thing by next week Tuesday, would also want you to go and check for us. What are these inmates being treated for? Is it a specialist treatment or are they suffering from ordinary flu? So that we can check whether these are specialist doctors or they're just general practitioners. So if we that's the information then we need on Tuesday. So Mali, you need to call the department and remind them that by Tuesday we need this list of things. Any, I just want us to try commit snow and then send one.
Okay. Thanks, Shepard. And the addition is the ghost payers, the people who have been paid and are not there. There's an allegation. We need to know how much they've been given and what has been done with those ghost payers and who got that money on their behalf.
Just a minute. Are you referring to the certification of the payroll?
Yes. I think there was entered into a case, but they are not in the system. If there was a ghost payroll, we need to know how many are they, how much are they paid, and who got that money on their behalf.
Chair, can I help on that one?
Yeah.
Just on that one, Chair. PG, because it does a sample, would not be able to know all those things. I think what we should do, say to the AG, please substantiate why you made a statement. He might have picked up, you see, it's not about the how many. Even if you pick up one chair, it's about fixing up the policy or fixing up the system. Because the AG would never be able to give us all of them because it has samples, and I'm sorry I'm speaking on your behalf. But they must give an example of at least one. Because for me, it's not about retribution. It's about fixing up the system of correctional services. So maybe that's what I want to say on that one. But I'm sorry that I took them worse.
Can we? Okay, let me give them one, and then we'll type this one and give the AG, because my understanding is that the AG is merely saying that there was no certification without making a determination that indeed there were people who were paid who did not deserve. Surveying the risk
Thank you, Chair. Now, I wanted to make an addition, Chair, on the issue of IT, because in the annual report, the department indicates that they are looking into e-recruiting. Now, they are wanting to expand their IT jurisdictions. And I would venture a request that on the day that they do come back with the entire IT team, that we get a full presentation of the scope of the IT work that they want to undertake. Because I've said this, that right now, there's a picture circulating on Facebook of thousands and thousands of applications which were just dumped somewhere with two officials standing on top of them from this department. But if they want to expand their scope of work, we need to really understand the capabilities of the department in this entire area. So I'm just, as a focus, as Honorable Vincent was saying, that Honorable Smith was saying that this makes or breaks the department. So can we, on that day, be assured of that we're going to get answers across the spectrum on this issue?
No. You'll be having all the IT people here for your talk. I mean, that's their domain. Yes.
I was going to say, Chair, on this thing of the families, can you write a letter to the Public Service Commission to say this is we are interested that the authority check from them of what exactly is going on this particular matter, because they are also relying on them to be able to get information. So I was just pleading with your office if you can.
All right, can we leave it at the comrades? Legal Commissioner, the acting Legal Commissioner, thank you very much. I think as you realize, we started with justice, but clearly the issues that we need to discuss are quite substantive. And I think today's exercise assisted us in scoping and saying, well, we think these are the areas that we may be interested in focusing on. But like I said, we want to sort out this thing of correctional service once and for all. It has to be sorted out. It can't wait anymore. It just can't. It has to be resolved once and for all so that we can focus on other things. I give you an answer, but I give you a fellow on
another. Also, to ask your office anything up to get a copy of annual report as soon as possible.
Okay. No, that's fine.
Okay, and
that. Okay, cool, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to the next one.